Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined for this very special episode on Avengers Infinity War. 10 years leading up to this, I am joined by... Do you want to be the first Avenger? Do you want to be...
I'm clearly not the first
God
Avenger.
God of Thunder? Do you want to be... I don't know how to...
Damn it. I was thinking of one, and I'm like, no, that does that. I played it in my head, and that didn't work.
Didn't work.
So I'll be like, I don't know, Thanos' ward.
Okay, I'm joined by Thanos' ward, Adam Rizgi.
Yeah.
Hi, Adam.
Hi. Will it be an affinity chore? F This Movie starts right now. I was also thinking we could do like a Chris Matthews where it's like F This Movie, where the action is.
I like it.
Yeah.
What's the movie that Chris Matthews is always asking about? I think it's Love Actually.
Is he?
There's a I recently maybe John Oliver did a supercut of like all the times Chris Matthews has brought up Love Actually, and it's a lot of times.
That's awesome.
I guess.
Yeah. I when I saw, I'm not going to talk about this in the What Have You Seen Lately because JB already did, but like. I saw Chappaquiddick, and the entire time I was just like, Chris Matthews must be really, like, he's, like, even if it's good, he's like, I can't go against the family.
As we are recording this, Avengers Infinity War is breaking box office records. It looks like it's going to have the best opening of all time, beating Star Wars The Force Awakens by just... $3 to $5 million. It's not like a rout, but
and that will last until the next movie.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
Because I thought Star Wars Force Awakens would hold for longer. So if like this, I think it's just a matter
that's
of
that's true.
Although I don't know how much more they can push it out there because at the theater I went to on Thursday night, it was literally playing every 5 to 10 minutes.
Right. And until you get every single human being there opening weekend, which I guess is the goal. But I will have some questions for you about whether the next one will make more money or less.
Okay.
Because there's always that thing where either people really want to see how it finishes or they feel burned by this one.
It's like the Reloaded to Revolutions thing.
Precisely.
Okay.
Even wasn't there even a drop off between Force Awakens and Last Jedi?
But the opening, they would have had to be.
I feel like
in
even,
total gross, for sure.
But I feel like that has to do more with repeat business. I think Force Awakens had way more repeat business
because
it's like fun. Anyway, we'll say this up front before we get into what have you seen lately. We will be spoiling all of Avengers Infinity War. There's no point in talking about it without talking specifics. So if you haven't seen it yet, you want to come back to the podcast, please feel free. But just know right up front that we will be spoiling this movie. Adam Rizgi, have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen some interesting stuff and some stuff that I think is like pretty decent.
All right.
I've seen so much, but I was just like, I got to find the ones that are the juiciest to talk to Patrick about.
Absolutely. I'm all about the juice.
So I got...
By which I mean O.J. Simpson?
Yeah. He was staying at Cosmopolitan when I was there on a business trip, and then I heard he got kicked out.
Did he... murder you?
Yeah.
Are you a ghost?
Yeah, I am.
I feel like this changes our dynamic.
I was in Ghost Stories.
Oh, okay.
I was at the very end. I was the credits.
Oh.
So I saw Truth or Dare.
It always takes me a second to register what that is.
Yeah,
and then every
hold on. Let me help you. Blumhouse's Truth or Dare. I saw Blumhouse's
honestly
Truth
that
or
helps
Dare.
A little bit, but like I'll see posters, I'll see it on the marquee, I'll see it like here's what's playing, and every time I'm like Truth or Dare. Truth or Dare. Oh, Black Hole Sun. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Black Hole Sun. Nice. Yeah, I knew that this movie was probably going to work for me because I'm definitely in a phase right now where I'm chasing Wish Upon and I'm like have like all this like delayed response to things like One Missed Call and like all these things like that.
Have you revisited Friend Request now that it's on Netflix?
No, I canceled Netflix.
Oh, okay, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, sorry, everyone.
No, it's okay.
Yeah,
listen, but Friend Request is there.
Yes, yes.
But
Friend
I think
Request
would be
is
impossible
there.
To watch again.
It's really tough. The only way it was okay to watch it was with you, like in an otherwise empty theater. So truth or dare is like somewhere in the middle mm-hmm. of the spectrum of a wish upon to friend request, which like all other movies, except for five other movies from 2017 that I thought were better than Wish Upon.
I love that Wish Upon is at the high end of the spectrum. Yes. So many people are like, what? That is the basement for most people.
Yeah. Yeah. And this list goes everlasting. My favorite bands are Everlast. Anyways. So... I there's
my
so many
favorite Cure album is Wish.
There's so many details in Truth or Dare that I just found fascinating. Like, okay, there's cursed Truth or Dare games.
Yeah.
But you would have to imagine out there, like in the world, people are also playing Truth or Dare and it's not a cursed one. So it's like, is this like a league game?
Is
like
it,
a bowling league?
It's not. There's not like a board involved.
No.
It's literally just, hey, truth or dare.
Yeah.
So how
it's
does
the
that...
It follows thing. It's the it follows thing where like somebody...
So you and I are sitting here and yeah. we just say, hey, truth or dare.
Yeah.
How is that cursed?
No, you have to find like the cursed guy.
Okay,
and
got
the cursed
it.
Guy will seek out the girl from Pretty Little Liars.
Okay.
And say, hey, get all of your friends because the way that it works is... If it's your turn, you're mm-hmm. basically screwed. You can do a truth or dare, but like the truth will embarrass you.
Right.
And then the dare is almost certainly going to kill you.
Okay.
But then they invent a rule like halfway through the movie where it's like you can't do three truths in a row. You got to do a dare. So this guy starts out and all of his friends before the movie started are basically dead. So it's just on him.
Got it.
So he needs to find more players so it can delay like his turn coming back up. So that's why these new group, the
got
group
it.
That we follow in the mm-hmm. movie is there. So, but it's got everything that I need in like a teen horror movie. It's got like research scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It's got scenes where people are like, we got to find this girl, look her up on Facebook. And then she's like, oh, she tagged that guy. Stuff like that. Like these are like lines of dialogue in the movie. There's stuff like, the lead actress has like a Habitat for Humanity YouTube channel because she's a project leader for Habitat for Humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically just her like going into a webcam and be like, okay, guys, we're going to build this house and this is how we're going to do it. And then apparently she has like tons of followers.
Yeah.
And that comes into play later
well,
in the movie.
Of course it does.
And it's great. And then there's
stuff Chekhov's like, YouTube channel.
Yeah. There's all this stuff where like... I knew that it went from like 2.5 to 3 stars once they were like, we're going to Mexico to find the mission where the nun is that like was
oh,
behind
no.
this in the '50s.
Do we have a special guest star as nun?
No.
Damn it. See, that's an opportunity for like a Sean Young to show up.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, there's no Faye Dunaway in the Bye Bye Man
right.
or anything like
right.
that. So like they go to Mexico to like find out the truth or dare thing. And then they discover, of course, from the nun spoilers a little bit for truth or dare.
Okay. All right, go
there's
ahead.
A truth. I won't spoil it too much, but there's a truth or dare demon named Kallax.
What is happening?
And then, like, one of the things you need to do to break the curse is, like, you have to cut out your tongue and put it in a special truth or dare box that's in the mission. And I'm just like, how did we get from here
what?
To here?
What?
But the finale is very... if you have a negative opinion about, like, millennials...
Uh-huh.
One of them does something at the end to like kind of resolve the story that's like really just money in the bank.
Oh, okay.
It's funny. It's a pretty funny ending.
Okay.
I like it.
All right.
So Truth or Dare was fun. I had a good time.
The trailer looked like
yeah.
Final Destination meets It Follows meets Black Hole Sun.
Oh yeah, it doesn't have a single original idea.
Why is Blumhouse attaching their name to this so hard? Like, if they want to be
yeah.
respectable,
yeah.
why is this the movie that they go out with Blumhouse's Truth or Dare?
I think it's because they've got a certain cachet now and they're banking on the name because they know they have a dog. But if they put Blumhouse's Truth or Dare, people are like, oh, that's the new Blumhouse movie. They have a quality.
Yeah, but you can do that maybe twice and then
yeah, but
you've burned through it.
But say they have Truth or Dare.
Yeah.
They burn people on that.
Yeah.
But then the next one they do is like the first Purge or something
okay,
like that.
Okay.
And then nobody remembers Truth or Dare.
Interesting.
So
they do have Halloween later this year.
They do.
Yeah.
Did you know that there are several articles describing a trailer?
Hold
that
on
premiered
a second.
At CinemaCon?
Did you know that there are several reactions to the title and the poster and the continuity that is rumored to be in this new Halloween?
Oh my God. Did you know that on the internet there are reactions to people's test scores from a from a private screening?
Did you know that also that private screening didn't happen?
Oh my God.
And that was a bogus article that people still continue to share to talk about how bogus it is? Like,
this is where we are.
I know who wrote the article. I know the site they wrote it for.
Yeah.
They fuck up like that all the time.
Yeah.
They're speaking into an echo chamber. Like, if you just let it die, it dies in silence.
Yeah.
The more you share it, the more you're outraged about it, the more it catches on, and now you and I are joking about it on a podcast.
Dies in silence. We'll be right back.
Blumhouse's dies in silence.
That, oh my God, I would love to see die. I want to see, like, Blumhouse's tic-tac-toe. It's like, can't do three X's in a row. You have to do a dare.
Just a girl rocking back and forth on her bedroom floor. X's and O's. X's and O's.
There's one kid. He's the friend in Edge of 17. He's
okay.
So he's in it. And then one of his truths is that he has to come out to his father.
Mm.
And then, like, they don't show it. And then they cut to, like, the next scene. And he's just like, I had to come out to my dad. And he actually wasn't that mad. And it's like, what? It's like, is truth or dare, like, sometimes good?
But also, yeah, what a weird thing to, like, create as a punishment, in air quotes, in horror movie.
Don't worry. He also gets punished in a topical way later, so it's okay.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. What else?
I went with my mom to see Super Troopers 2.
Okay.
She hadn't seen any of the Broken Lizards movies, and
she was
completely lost and looking at me like, I have a dumb sense of humor just like you, Adam, but I don't understand this one. I thought it was, like, if I'm grading on the comedy sequel curve, it's better than most.
Okay.
I think it's, like, I'm a Broken Lizard fan. I think it's probably, like, their worst movie. But it has some funny stuff.
So rank the Broken Lizard movies.
Okay, I haven't seen. I think there's a few that I haven't seen. But
well, then what are we doing here?
No, hold on. I've seen, like, the main ones.
Okay,
but I think they started, like, going, like, direct to video.
So you have not seen Slam and Salmon.
I have seen Slam and Salmon.
Okay, that was a direct to video.
I think. I saw. So I would go Super Troopers, the first one.
Okay.
Beer Fest.
Okay.
Then I would go Slam and Salmon.
Interesting. Above Club Dread.
Then Club Dread, then Super Troopers 2.
All right.
But Super Troopers 2 is, like, weird to watch in 2018, because in 2002, this was, like, the age of, you know, Fox was still releasing, like, Joe Somebody in theaters and stuff. So, like, you would get these weird comedies. But, like, now that hardly ever happens.
Right.
So it was definitely like being in a time machine.
Okay.
And I kind of liked it from that retro aspect.
Sure.
And, you know, Rob Lowe is the villain, and he's funny because he's good as a comedy villain and stuff. So it had spots. If you're a fan of Broken Lizard, you could do worse.
I'm weirdly indifferent towards Broken Lizard.
Actually, you couldn't do worse because it's their worst movie. Sorry.
I find their comedies weirdly low on jokes.
Oh, see? That surprises me.
But I haven't. It's been a while since I have seen any of them.
This is an indicator if you'll like the movie or not.
All right.
Like, one of the first jokes in the movie is that one of these troopers is dreaming that, like, they all got fired from the police department and became a rock band,
mm-hmm.
and the band's name is Cracklin' Bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that's funny, then I think you'll find stuff funny. I thought it was kind of funny because it's such a stupid name.
All right.
So, yeah.
This might be why I find their comedies low on jokes.
And
I'm waiting for the joke, but I see. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was a MoviePass.
Okay, good.
And MoviePass is going to be the circle in about a month.
Hashtag.
What?
Is it Justice for...
Oh, Justice for Mercer.
Yeah. I haven't seen the circle. I just know that from you and Rob putting it in articles.
That would be so great if, like, MoviePass had a drone and it's, like, following you because you have to upload the tickets now. So it's got, like, the GPS. So it's, like, following you after the movie, and then it swoops down and then you drive off a bridge. And it's, like, the first MoviePass casualty, and that'll be the Mercer.
It's going to happen. Yeah. Blumhouse's MoviePass.
Yes. I also love how it's passive aggressive on the app where it says, you've already seen this.
Right.
No ticket for you. Anyway,
that's bogus, but whatever.
It's weird. I rewatched Ladybugs.
Yes, you did.
On Amazon Prime.
Yes.
I used to watch that movie a lot when it was on HBO.
Okay.
When I was like 11 or 10. And I thought it was really funny back then. And now I'm just like, wow, this could never happen nowadays. Because there's a lot of like jokes about cross-dressing that's inappropriate now. And a lot of like uncomfortable like sexuality stuff, like with like Rodney Dangerfield will be like in the dressing room with Jonathan Brandis, like shoving him into a dress, and he's like it's only tight at the beginning, get in there.
And somebody overhears and thinks that he's anally like raping a child.
Yeah,
so I get why that's funny in a family comedy.
92. And then it's weird too because they keep saying like Rodney Dangerfield has to coach this youth soccer team that's run by his boss in order to get like the big promotion.
This is a thing that happens.
But it's so weird because they keep talking to him like he's 40, but he's 72 years old. And they're just like, I'm like, why is his job so precarious that like if the soccer team, like if he's their best salesman,
right.
should you just give him the promotion? Right. But if he's also your best salesman, why would his job be at risk if the team doesn't win?
Right. Also, why are you investing this much time and promoting someone who, let's face it,
is 72
doesn't
years
have
old.
A ton of time left.
Yeah, it was weird. And then there's like, I like Rodney Dangerfield enough, but I think it's weird that there's like scenes where there's like a girl named Penny Pester, because of course that's a character name in a movie, and she's like the girl who doesn't think she's pretty and stuff like that. So there's this long scene where like Rodney Dangerfield like goes up to her, and it's just like she has her hair tied back and she wears like sports goggles and stuff like that.
No.
And that
makes Plainy Janey ponytail.
Yeah, exactly. So Rodney Dangerfield is just like, why aren't you over there talking to the boys? And then she's just like,
this whole thing has been worth it.
Okay, good. And then she's just like, I'm not pretty, Coach Chester. And then he's just like, oh, if I were your age, I would date you. But I don't know if you'd date me. And then it ends the scene where she's just like, I think you're attractive.
Oh, boy.
Coach, and she kisses him on the cheek. And he's just like,
boy.
He's like, oh, this is illegal. It's so weird.
Wow.
Yeah. It's an interesting movie to watch.
And yeah.
It makes you real sad because of the Brandis thing and
Vanessa Shaw, right?
It.
Yeah.
But it's weird, too, because they have this, like, fantasy montage where she's running, like, kind of like in 10 with Bo Derek.
Mm-hmm.
But she's, like, 15.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Yeah, there's a weird thing, late 80s, early 90s, because she's out. I mentioned this, I think, when I was talking about Blockers.
Yeah.
She's out of control.
Yeah.
The Tony Danza movie is like a father being obsessed with his daughter's sexuality, and there's the scene of her in the bikini.
Yeah.
My Father, the Hero.
Oh, of course.
Where child Katherine Heigl is in a thong in front of her father, and they're pretending to date. Like, what was happening? And then we have Ladybugs.
Or, like, Blame It on Rio, where they're, like, not children,
well,
but it's, like, also very creepy.
Yeah.
Let's swap daughters.
Yeah.
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 Comedies.
It's hilarious.
If you want to find, like, the basement of morality, I think comedies is where to go.
Probably.
The critics were picking on slasher movies. No. Go through this door. So after we were talking about heavy action movies, I rewatched Walking Tall.
Oh, yeah.
And I still like Walking Tall. The thing that's weird, though, is, like, it's... Okay, so he's, like, he becomes sheriff to clean up the town. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, he immediately becomes maybe more corrupt than them. Like, these guys, like, are basically ignoring every other crime in the town except to be, like, police brutality against the bad guys. So
the,
I thought that was
the means justify the ends, I guess.
Yeah, and then I thought it was... I also remembered the movie being, like, crazy short. And then I looked at the runtime, and it's at 86 minutes. And I'm like, that doesn't check out. Like, I thought it was, like, even shorter than that. The movie itself, the movie proper, is 73 minutes, and it's 13 minutes of end credits.
Holy cow.
I could not believe it.
That's like some full moon shit right there.
I thought, oh, do they do that?
They don't do 13-minute credits. Okay. They just have 76-minute movies.
Yeah.
Or in the case of Evil Bong 777, like 54-minute movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a movie.
In the post-credit scene, Johnny Knoxville disintegrates.
Oh, my gosh.
It was weird.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And then I saw Black Dog. I was going to do it 20
too.
Years later. Really?
Yeah.
I was going to do it 20 years later on it, but I'm already doing one on He Got Game, and I'm like, there's enough to talk about just with that.
Sure.
And I would much rather talk to you about Black Dog than write about Black Dog.
I have surprisingly little to say about Black Dog, except for I miss this kind of movie.
I do too. It's obviously like not flawless.
No.
I love, like, we talked about in the Heavy Action show how I love scenes of like trucks falling off cliffs.
Sure.
I also apparently love trucks just toppling over. Like, it doesn't matter if it's the
because
rig.
They were real trucks.
It's
which
amazing.
Makes a big difference. Because, like, you wouldn't see that now.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then the whole meatloaf thing doesn't make any sense to me.
Oh my gosh.
I think it's weird because, like, so Patrick Swayze's running these guns for his boss, and then he calls his boss and says, "Hey, Meatloaf's trying to kill me. You know, the guy I picked up the truck from,"
right.
And the guy's just like, "You can't handle this?" And it's like, why don't you just, like, go to anywhere else where I can pick up a rig where the guy's not going to try to kill me? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
And then I love how his boss says, he's like, so Swayze's name is Jack Cruz, which is, like, the greatest.
Pretty good action movie name.
Action movie name.
Yep.
And then he's just like, "I heard about you. You could drive a ice cream truck through hell on the 4th of July." And I'm just like, that doesn't... What?
The 4th of July part, I think, is where it falls apart.
But that's like saying, like, you could drive a Power Wheels on the expressway during Passover. It's like, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, right. I mean, the ice cream truck through hell.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the implication is without the ice cream melting.
I get you.
I think that's... Now, he doesn't say that.
Yeah.
So he could have just said any car through hell.
Yes.
You could drive a Ford Taurus through hell.
Yeah.
I think he means without the ice cream melting. But why the 4th of July?
Hottest day of...
Is that what it is?
Or hottest time of the year?
Less traffic?
Yeah.
Perhaps?
Yeah, maybe.
Everybody's at a barbecue,
mm-hmm.
lining up for fireworks,
mm-hmm.
so the roads in hell are a little clearer, I guess.
Did you know that Black Dog is a metaphor driving it too hard for
Wait,
too long?
What are you talking about?
It's not just a literal black dog.
Oh,
although
my gosh,
there is
there
a literal
is
black
an
dog
actual
in Black,
black
dog.
Dog.
I thought it was just going to be the truck's name.
Yeah, I assumed that it was his CB handle or
There's
something
a
before
dog
I saw
inside
it.
The cab.
Oh, I know.
And then if you drive it to... And by the way, Patrick Swayze should be in prison. I don't feel bad for him. He, like, drove so much that he was so tired that he careened his car
yeah.
into a couple that were on the side of the road yeah. with a breakdown.
Yeah.
I missed
it. Was Kurt Russell and what's her name in the movie Breakdown? Shared universe.
Ooh.
Who's like the Breakdown. Kathleen Quinlan? Is that who it is?
Of course. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But again, a movie from this period that they don't make anymore. Brian Sauer had it on his underrated 98 list.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I need to finally check out Black Dog.
Yeah.
And is it like Morgan Creek? Because if it's not, it should be.
I don't think it was. It should be.
100%. Yeah. This
oh,
is like
sure.
a late
yeah.
90s Morgan Creek chill factor movie,
this
right?
This would be like a good Randy Travis double feature with Fire Down Below.
There you go.
Yeah. I also like how Randy Travis is like a bad singer at the beginning, but then like because he's not like in on it, he turns into a great singer.
That's how singing works.
Okay, I get you. Yeah.
Anything else?
That's it.
All right, I'll go fairly quickly through mine because I really just want to talk about them for being like, what is this?
Okay.
We covered Black Dog, so that is great. I watched a Lucio Fulci movie for the first time called Touch of Death, which I believe is one of his movies from when he was directing for TV.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when I hear, Argento went through a TV period, Fulci went through a TV period. And when we hear, oh, this guy's directing for TV now, we think of a certain kind of movie. The Italian TV movies are not like subdued on gore or sex or anything like that. This is just as gory as anything he's ever done. It's about a guy who just keeps murdering women for their money. It's weirdly comedic for a Fulci movie, like okay. in a way that is deliberate, where it's sort of a black comedy.
So are they, do they have to be like elderly women or is
not it? Necessarily, okay. But they're usually like one woman has like herpetic sores all over her face.
Oh,
And like
what's her
on
name?
Her boobs, she has like giant moles with hairs growing out of them, like that they put on prosthetically and it's supposed to gross us out.
Yeah.
One woman is an annoying opera singer, which I guess makes her undesirable to the rest of the world. So he is like preying upon women who nobody else wants.
Okay.
It's fascinating. I mean, it was, I enjoyed it quite a bit because it's again, just crazy. And every time I watch a Fulci movie, I feel like I'm peering into his brain, and not necessarily liking what I see, but I find it fascinating. So if you're a fan of these kinds of movies, I recommend that one. It is slightly lesser known.
Better or worse than Ladybugs?
I would probably watch it before Ladybugs, I think.
There you go.
I'm pretty sure. And then two quick rewatches that I just want to talk about because I know you will appreciate them. And we kind of talked about both of them over text already.
Okay.
The first one, and again, I don't know why I did this. It was on Hulu, and it showed up, and I was like, I haven't watched this movie since the year 2000, when I saw it opening weekend theatrically. And that is a little movie called Boys and Girls, which came at sort of the tail end of that very brief Miramax push for like teen movies that kicks off more or less with She's All That. Mm-hmm. And
didn't they have Get Over It as part of that?
They had Get Over It. They had Down to You.
Yeah.
They had.
I like Down to You.
I don't like Down to You at all. I like Get Over It.
I like Get Over It.
I think if they took out a few scenes from Get Over It, Get Over It to me seems like there was a studio mandate every 15 minutes to have something outrageous happen. So we get the scene in like the strip club or the scene where the blonde model does something at dinner.
I don't remember it too well.
There's these dumb sequences, and then there's all this other stuff about this high school production of Taming of the Shrew as a musical, and Martin Short and Kirsten Dunst being like super charming.
Yep.
The opening is like a dance number. There's all this great stuff in there, and then every few minutes there's this awful thing that you're like, Miramax said, you know, put Carmen Electra in this movie. So Boys and Girls is, you know, they had their in-house stars. So they had Freddie Prinze, clearly their leading man.
Good cook, bad actor.
Jason Biggs trying to figure out what he's going to do post-American Pie.
Yeah, Frosted Tips.
I mean, new color Frosted Tips in every scene.
Yeah.
Claire Forlani. Yeah. Twice as old as everyone in the movie.
Yeah, she kind of like was this in like the mid-90s, which it's weird because it's like when you see like an athlete and they're like been in the NBA for 5 years and they're like, they're a veteran, even though they're like 24.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not that she looks old. It's just, I know that she's been around longer. She just seems more seasoned as a human being than Freddie Prinze, who
he seems like a very nice man, but like he does not bring it.
I have found him inoffensive in other movies. You know, like I don't think he's great in She's All That, but I don't really have a problem with him.
Is this another movie like Loser where like they have a bad haircut and that's how that reflects them
there's
like really
such
dirty?
A bad haircut.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. For like the first half of the movie.
I vaguely remember his
everything
being
about
like
it
terrible.
So what I think I said was like this had to be one of the worst wide release movies I've ever seen. Because I remember not liking it in 2000, but like watching it now, I am amazed at how bad it is.
Yeah. He dated Heather Donahue in that movie,
which I think was like the draw for me in 2000 was like, let me see this Blair Witch woman outside of Blair Witch.
Yeah. She works at Steak and Shake.
And this is basically, that's right. This is pretty much all she did. And now she just like grows weed and gets arrested.
Yes. Yes. I don't promote this, but I do remember when I saw Boys and Girls that I did a catcall halfway through the movie and it got a huge laugh. And it was during...
Was it for Biggs?
No, it was... So the movie, obviously, like even in 2000, it didn't work.
No.
So I saw it like that weekend. It was like Sunday night or something. Me too. Like that. And it, we could have been in the same theater.
Was it at AMC 30?
Yeah.
We were 100% in the same
theater. Let me know if you remember this then. Maybe
I
you
don't.
Heard it. Okay.
I don't. But now, it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
It's the scene where I think it's Amanda Detmer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amanda Detmer reveals that she has feelings for Claire Forlani, and then they have a kiss.
Yeah.
And I just said, I didn't yell it, but I said, like, kind of loud, I said, it's about time.
Okay.
And it got a huge laugh, and then I was, like, kind of emboldened, and then I'm just like, do I have to be this guy for the rest of the movie? But I didn't, but
good call.
I held
good call.
Back.
No, that's good.
But, yeah, I saw that movie with...
You Costanza'd.
Yeah, I did. I saw that movie with... I don't even... It's all coming back to me. I saw that movie with my friend Joe and his girlfriend Casey, and I liked Casey also.
Oh, no.
And I remember, like, looking longingly, being like...
During Boys and Girls.
During Boys and Girls.
Maybe this is our story. Like, it's so clearly an attempt to be When Harry Met Sally for, like, the garbage early 2000s teen set.
It's also another movie where, like, you just know that that couple has no business being together.
No.
Like, they're not a fit at
Nor
all.
Nor do they even seem like friends.
Yeah, it's weird. So, like, when they end up together at the
end. Yes, back on the plane, the same way they started when they were children. They met on a plane as children and then reconnect, I think, in college?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I love pendulum romance.
There's a dance number, and I was like, "What is going on?"
Oh,
and then I looked
Apollo
it up.
440, right?
I don't
know. Stop the rock.
Yeah. Stop the rock. So I looked it up, and I was like, "Oh, this is the guy who did She's All That."
Yeah.
So clearly, either he or one of the Weinsteins was like, "Hey, put a dance number in this thing. It was a big hit in She's All That."
Do that dance I taught all of you.
Sadly, Usher was not. But then all of a sudden, like shaving cream or something starts spraying out on them.
Well, that happens, you
it's,
know, because
anyway.
Every venue wants to ruin their venue.
Everyone hates us right now because they're just waiting for us to get to Avengers Infinity War. So.
I kind of just want
to
keep talking about it.
The other movie that I rewatched is The Village.
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan's The Village,
yeah.
Which in my memory was 2/3 of a good movie.
Okay.
And turns out to be 1/10 of a good movie.
I might disagree with you there.
Sure. Fair enough. I think it's his best shot movie. I think the score is...
It's still James Newton Howard, right?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I think there's a great cast.
Yep.
That is almost uniformly terrible, but great actors, with the exception of Bryce Dallas Howard.
Okay.
Who I think is so good.
Okay.
And yesterday when I was sitting through the Jurassic World 2 or Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom trailer, which I literally can't get a sense of. Mm-hmm. That trailer does not give me a sense of what that movie is, except that it's a buddy cop movie with Chris Pratt and a dinosaur.
Yeah, I every time I hear him go blue, I like brain cells blow up. That same thing with, did you see the Venom trailer?
Yeah.
Like my ears start anytime what's her name? Captain America's girlfriend, Jenny Slate, says symbiote.
Symbiote.
I'm just like, just say symbiote or symbiote.
I, for the life of me, can't figure out why the internet was so excited about that Venom trailer. Like, A, I don't need a Venom movie in my life.
Yeah.
But fine, some people do. B, that movie, if it came out in 94, I'd be giving it a pass. I would be like, yeah, this looks like 1994. C, people are sharing the pictures of Venom, being like, oh, he looks like Venom. They finally got it right. He looks like Venom. Like, put it side by side with Topher Grace. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah, I was going to say.
What are we talking about?
Similar.
What are we talking about? Anyway.
Yeah. The Village.
Jurassic World.
Oh,
no,
Jurassic
I'm,
World.
I'm getting back to The Village.
Yeah.
I almost want to go up to, you know, there's no, like, ticket takers anymore. There's no person selling you a ticket. It's all on your phone and kiosks and all that. But I almost want to find a person selling a ticket when I buy my ticket to Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom and explain to them, just so you know, I'm only seeing this for Bryce Dallas Howard. Like, I want someone to know that.
Yeah.
She's so good in The Village.
Yes.
And I like the idea of the movie. I think it's been long enough. Maybe I won't spoil The Village for you all, but like, this was the movie where there was some backlash, you know, against M. Night.
One twist too many.
People felt burned. I like the idea of, we live in this village. We can't go outside this area because there are monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Even the monster design, I think, is fairly cool.
It was kind of like Skeksis-ish.
Yes. And then when the reveal happens, you have to question everything you know about the monster design, because I don't know who's making that and who designed it. All of the twists are terrible, but I think even before the twists, I think the dialogue and some of the performances by actors I like are shockingly bad. I think Judy Greer, who you and I are both big Greer fans, gives a speech where she talks about how she wants to marry Joaquin Phoenix that is embarrassing. And it was like, if this was her first movie, maybe I would give it a pass. All the stuff about the bad color. I mean, it's like, there's so much bad stuff in this movie that I didn't remember.
I think he's starting to get, like, Shyamalan was starting to get into that Lady in the Water territory just like he's coming up with his own nomenclature and things like that. And it's like, we're not going with you anymore on this.
No.
I rewatched like maybe a half hour of The Village on cable about a, I don't know, it was probably a year ago. And I remember, I thought it was like interesting enough where it made me want to rewatch it a year later, apparently. It's the first movie where it seems like whatever happened to Shyamalan where he lost it just kind of it's became evident. And I remember seeing that like at AMC 30 on opening night. It was a double feature with Harold and Kumar. That once the reveal happened, it was getting like, it was that weird, it was a weird thing where it's like you could see somebody's career unravel in a theater. And like people were talking like, and no one cared. It was, I've only seen that in like during Ang Lee's Hulk where like people just give up in the theater and nobody gives a shit. Like people are talking
I've
to each other.
I've had that happen before. So, I'm trying to think of when.
Yeah.
I think the 98 Godzilla.
Yeah.
I think a few other movies.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then like at the end of The Village, I remember it's the one or two times that and The Ring 2 where people started booing at the screen after it was
over. I never
over.
Saw The Ring 2.
Yeah, The Ring 2 is so forgettable, I don't even know why you would boo. You should be like just booing yourself for deciding to go to The Ring 2.
All right, let's get into Avengers Infinity War.
Let's do it.
It's all been building to this.
Aha!
Did you like the movie?
I really liked it.
Okay, you've seen it twice.
I have seen it twice.
I've seen it but once.
Okay. Get on my back. I will carry you. I will carry you.
I liked it as well.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know how to couch this discussion because like, I was very entertained by it.
Mm-hmm.
It rewards me for being a fan of all of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
In the week leading up to it, I rewatched a bunch of them, which I normally don't do. Mm-hmm. I don't find myself wanting to rewatch these movies very often.
Yes.
But sometimes when a new one comes out, I'm like, oh, cool. Here's an excuse to, you know, check out Ant-Man and Iron Man 3 again.
Mm-hmm.
And found myself generally enjoying them, with the exception of Iron Man 2, which I think I liked less.
Yeah.
So I was primed for this movie. I enjoyed it. I was like, okay, they pulled it off.
Mm-hmm.
I think they pulled off what they were trying to do. At the same time, I don't know, and this is going to piss people off right away, but like, I don't even know if it's a movie. Like, it's a movie.
Oh, so just being like the structure?
Yeah. And part of it is, honestly, and as we as I said, we're going to be spoiling this. Like, it's only half a movie. So I have to look at it that way. And I know that this is like the new, this is the new model, this sort of long form storytelling, shared universe thing that like Marvel is doing and doing very well and doing better than anyone else.
Yeah.
So if I just take it on its own terms as the next chapter in this Marvel story, this thing where they pull everything together, yes, absolutely it works. If I'm just standing outside of it, it's not a movie in that, you know, it doesn't really tell a story so much as kind of like present a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Characters don't really change, and there aren't really one of my disappointments, and I don't mean to lead with disappointments because I like this movie. So everyone relax, because whenever we do Star Wars or comic book movies is when we get angry comments.
But that's the thing, though. Like, you, even if it's a movie that you like, you could not like 100% of it.
Right.
And you can have a discussion about those
Did
things.
You read that New York Times piece that everyone was sharing because the headline was bad?
I don't think so.
And everyone was mad. It was like characters aren't introduced in this movie. They just like show up.
Oh,
and everyone's like, yeah, that's how sequels work, dumbass. So I looked at the review and I was like, yeah, but some of it is making a fair point. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I was missing was some of that character.
There's a few people who definitely get underserved.
Character stuff. I mean, people get a line here and there, but in terms of like characters changing a little bit or being affected by what's happening, I don't see enough of it. I really don't.
Is there like an example that's in your head right now of like a character not reacting to the
It's not
extent?
Even that they're not reacting. It's just that like they're not. I mean, Thor a little bit gets, you know, he has a motivation in terms of like he's definitely driven by like anger and grief.
Yeah. I think it's key that he was the Asgard was the first target of Thanos, because coming off of Thor Ragnarok, which is very happy-go-lucky for the most part, I think like it wouldn't make sense for him to be so grim. So like they needed that kind of inciting incident from there.
And that kind of works. Yeah. I mean, my big disappointment is Captain America.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, and this is just me with a hunch, I think that they're probably saving his stuff for part two.
Sure.
It's not called part two, but you know what I mean.
It doesn't have a name yet. Yeah. In fact, it does have a name, but they haven't announced it because they said the name is a spoiler.
Yeah, but I totally agree with you. The first time I saw it, I was kind of, it caught up to me like by the end where I was like, oh, they really didn't give Captain America a whole lot to do in this one. Even to the, I mean, like Iron Man has enough, I think, to do, but like Captain America, who's kind of the yin and the yang of the Avengers, he just seems he's introduced really late.
Yeah.
And then he's not really doing a whole lot. I think that his section of the movie is among my least favorite parts of the movie.
The Wakanda stuff?
No. Well, it's funny because like, I almost don't think of him as the Wakanda stuff. I think of him as like he's with Falcon and
Black Widow.
Black Widow and stuff like that, and they just kind of are placeholders. They don't really have a whole lot of things going on.
It's interesting because I read something about this on Twitter and then experienced it in my theater, that scene in Scotland where he appears. He kind of walks out of the shadows.
Yeah.
Got applause.
That got a cheer in my theater,
I mean,
too.
Which is awesome, right? Yeah. Because, again, leading up to this, Captain America is my favorite character in the MCU. Mm-hmm. I think he has the best movies. I think he's the most interesting character for how he changes from where we meet him to now.
Completely, yeah.
And he hasn't even necessarily changed because he still has that moral compass. It's just that the world around him has changed so much and he's reacting to that.
Yeah.
So he gets a big cheer, which is awesome. But then we don't feel any of the time that he's been gone. We don't feel that he's been in hiding or that, you know what I mean? Like there's a little bit of that, like, okay, yeah, I'm going to come back and help because it's the right thing to do, even though I had a falling out with the Avengers, but like none of it's really dealt with. And yeah, I'm guessing Tony Stark and Captain America reunite in the next one.
Yeah. I think like he does, I feel like he kind of does go through somewhat of a change by the end of it. It's just his last line.
Sure.
Because in his last line, it's really the first time we've seen Captain America where he's down on the ground and is not picking himself back up right away.
Sure.
And he is just not the, you know, the leader that they're going to need. He's just kind of like still feeling it because it just happened and everything. So,
and I struggle with it a little bit. I agree with you.
It's
but
almost
like
the Nazis. It's like, yeah, fuck them. Like, I don't care like how big the threat is, but this time for whatever reason, like just kind of seeing that his side is just completely decimated, that he might not have it just yet. Like he has to regroup.
And I agree with all of that. I just feel like he's been through that to some extent a little bit in Winter Soldier, finding out that S.H.I.E.L.D. is Hydra, in Avengers finding out that like half the Avengers don't agree with him. Like he's the one who has experienced that feeling of loss, I think, more than any of the Avengers.
Yeah.
And so for him to be on the ground like, oh my God, we lost, is almost like he's felt that before. Do you know what I mean? But I also think it still works, and I think he is the character that we need to see have that moment. So yeah. We're talking about the movie, everyone. I'm not criticizing the movie. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the movie.
I know.
You know, Tony Stark, I feel like He's got a, he doesn't really have like an arc, but they do have him be like a little bit more maybe afraid or
they've been vulnerable for a while. That's the thing. Like, yeah, it's they haven't like figured out a new thing for him.
And he keeps giving up being Iron Man only to very easily be Iron Man again.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have any momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's weird because like it's almost like some other characters have stolen his personality, like Doctor Strange is now
for sure.
Iron Man,
right?
Peter Parker is Iron Man. Star Lord is Iron Man.
Like, Star Lord is definitely Iron Man. Well, and this is what
there's a lot of Iron Mans.
I think that's
around.
What I was talking. I was talking about this the other day with Mike, and I was saying I think part of the reason that Captain America is my favorite is because I'm just at a point in my life where like I don't need cynicism and snark. Yeah. Like, and I love Captain America for his sincerity.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite moments in the entire movie, courtesy of him, is his response to "I am Groot," which is
"Oh, that's amazing!
I am Steve Rogers," and it's like it's such a perfect character moment.
Yeah.
It's not going for a laugh, but it gets a laugh because he's so sincere, and that's what I love so much about that character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
Spider-Man has a little bit of that. I think that's I love that about Peter Parker. So. Yeah, okay. That like he jokes around.
Yeah.
But there's sort of a youthful sincerity to it all. When he's apologizing, like, "I'm sorry, I don't know your names yet." Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I love all right. that.
I want to get back to Spider-Man, but
yes.
I wanted to keep talking about Iron Man.
Though, yeah.
Because I started with the Marvel movies being, like, I think the first Iron Man is a good movie, but I was still kind of in my phase where, I don't know, I just, like, the Robert Downey Jr. plus Tony Stark alchemy was just too much for me. And over time I've really appreciated kind of like his, I don't know, just like kind of humble pie that he's eaten.
Sure, yeah.
Like with the Tony Stark character, like he seems like he actually cares about, he's not just talking to himself, like he's talking to other people now.
Yeah.
And I thought that, and I've liked Robert Downey Jr. more and more in this role as time's gone on, especially like in Civil War and things like that. I mean, like, I think now he's Dom in Fast and Furious. He's just like the guy kind of like holding it together.
Right.
But like, there's nothing new really we're learning about him.
Yeah.
So I agree with you there. Spider-Man, this might be our biggest disagreement.
Okay.
I don't get it. Like, I just don't like Spider-Man in these new movies.
Okay.
Like, I really like Spider-Man in... I think I'm coming to terms now that I just like Raimi Spider-Man.
Okay.
Like, I'm not, like, as big of a Spider-Man guy as I thought I was.
Okay.
But I just like that iteration because there's just nothing interesting about him to me. I think, like, he can land, like, a laugh line every once in a while, but... and maybe it's very true to the character, but, like, even... Okay, like, and this is just a huge movie, so, like, I shouldn't be maybe nitpicking this aspect of it, but, like, he gets metal appendages.
Yeah.
It's like Doc Ock. He's, like, turned into, like, Doc Ock, and there's no reaction to anything about that, whereas if this was in, like, the earlier Spider-Man movies, this would be, like, a big freaking deal. This would be, like, this new power that I have.
Well, and my hope is that they get rid of it after this Infinity War nonsense, because I'm not a fan of the Iron Spider, they have kind of called it, you know, because it's Spider-Man with Iron Man tech. That's one of my least favorite things about the movie, honestly.
I like the line. We'll get back to it, but like one of the lines I love was when they're just like, "Wait a minute, there's an Ant-Man and a Spider-Man," it's just like, this has gotten so convoluted that like they're catching up. It's funny. I don't know, the way they do it is funny.
They do a couple cool things with the eight arms, but I agree. Like I'm not into that, and it's so easy. And again, do we need this movie? Can't service a scene of him learning how to use the armor. You know, like there's just too much to do.
Yeah.
So we have to skip that beat. Obviously, he falls into it very, very easily. Do I wish that he was just regular Spider-Man? Yes, 100%. Because to me, that's more interesting watching that iteration of the character, even in that costume, interacting, especially with the location that he's on, which is, you know, this, he's in space basically. And I would love to see just the Spider-Man tights running around in space.
Yeah.
I love Tom Holland as Spider-Man. I really do. And I love the dynamic that he brings, which is just this sort of youthful excitement. Everybody else is like a little bit jaded, a little bit like, we do this because we have to.
Yeah.
And he's the one who's like, he's excited to do it. He wants to do it. I mean, his face when Tony dubs him an Avenger is like so great. Him saying Footloose never was a classic.
That was really funny. This movie's that, and we can't, we have to state, like, this is a really funny movie, I think.
It is, but it's, but also not too jokey. I don't feel like, I don't feel like they're all constantly inserting jokes. And I know this is one of the criticisms of the Marvel movies, particularly from the DC fans, that everyone is real quippy and jokey.
Yeah, I think with the exception of maybe like one scene, though, the jokes are placed in moments where it makes sense for them to be jokes. It's like there's
and Spider-Man isn't making a joke right there.
Yeah.
He's just
he's just being him.
It's coming out of character, exactly. Yeah. Same with the Captain America
beat. Or like that old movie Aliens and stuff like that.
Right, which is, again, a callback to, remember that really old movie Empire Strikes Back from Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all joking. Like, Tony Stark is being funny.
Yeah.
Star-Lord sometimes is being funny, but like a lot of the other characters make us laugh just by being themselves and the way that they kind of bounce off one another, which is great.
And that's one thing I was thinking about yesterday, because I'm of the Marvel Cinematic Universe outside of Captain America, like, Guardians are my thing. Like, I love the Guardians.
I think they were maybe my favorite stuff in this movie.
Yes.
Like, all the stuff with the Guardians.
Yeah, they're invaluable.
Yeah.
I think they're amazing.
Yeah.
And they're funny, too. And like, Drax, like, it's at the point now where if Drax didn't work, he would be insufferable.
100%.
But because I like that character and how he bounces off the other characters, anything he says, anything Rocket says, like, I always laugh just because I like those characters so much. And also, like, I said in a column I wrote with Alejandra, like, I'm tired of Chris Pratt, but never as Star-Lord. I always am on board with him as Star-Lord. I think he's so perfect for that part.
He is, and it helps that, like, other characters call him out on his bullshit a lot.
Yeah.
Because Tony Stark doesn't totally get called out on his bullshit, except by Captain America, which is, again, one of the reasons Captain America is awesome.
Yeah.
But everyone's just like, ha-ha, that's Tony. Whereas Star-Lord is constantly, like, wishing he was Tony Stark, but constantly being knocked down by people who are like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
It was so fun. Again, I just think I need to reframe a little bit of, like, how we're looking at this movie, because it doesn't function as a regular movie. So when I say it's not a movie, I don't mean, like, I don't even know what I mean.
It's an all-star game.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put
that's
it.
That's how I see it. Like, it's, although, like, it's like when the All-Star game, you get, if you win, it decides if your league is going to get home field advantage in the World Series. It's like there's some stakes there, but, like, I do agree. It's like if you're watching an All-Star game on TV, you're never going to be like, oh, that, like, it's never going to be like a Michael Jordan game or something like that. It's going to be like a little bit of everybody, and then, like, you just kind of enjoy the moments with your guys or your girls and stuff like that. So I don't know. I really, it's weird because I'm not always on board with the Marvel movies, even though I kind of am. And what I mean by that is, like, I made a joke that I'll give 3 stars to them every day. And I think I'm always just kind of wanting them to be a little bit more, with the exception of a handful of them. But for whatever reason, like, this was one that, like, really got me. Like, I really, really liked it. And I think part of it is just, it feels like going into the next movie, there's some gravity and some genuine, like, deep emotion to it. Like, I really care about what's going on with these now, whereas I've said before that a lot of these movies are kind of ephemeral, and it's weird because I don't think that this movie would work as well unless those other movies, like, those other movies had to have worked for me to care. So it's like I wasn't giving them enough credit. It's like, yeah, they're ephemeral, but, like, they're an accumulation to this thing that I really, really enjoy now. So I guess what I'm saying is I was too hard on the Marvel movies, guys.
Well, it's, you know, they keep moving the bar, because when they announced we're going to make a Captain America movie and a Thor movie, and we're building to an Avengers movie.
Yeah.
I was like, that's insane. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're ever going to pull that off because they have to pull off four movies first for us to even care about the Avengers, right? Mm-hmm. And then they do, and then the Avengers works for the most part. I forget who said it, but somebody said it works in all the ways that it needs to.
Is that film critic?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. And which I agree with because there's a ton of stuff in that movie that doesn't work, but it works in the ways that it needs to.
Yeah.
And again, it has its own story in terms of how does this group of people figure out how to work together?
Yeah.
So it works as kind of a standalone movie. And here we are all these years later, and each time it's like, well, how are they going to pull this off? Well, how are they going to pull this off? Captain America Civil War, like, well, how are they going to pull this off? I don't want to watch these characters that I like fight each other. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, they figured out a way to make it work. Cool. Yeah. And honestly, Infinity War was like, is this a bridge too far? Is this where the whole thing starts to collapse under itself? Because we have so many characters and so many things to service.
Yeah.
And yes, like I said, it's not quite a movie in the way that I guess like Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 isn't quite a movie, right? It's half a movie.
Yeah.
So I think when the second part comes out, I'll be able to look at them as a whole and say, okay, this as a whole, it totally works. And there is enough legit emotion throughout the film that it's not totally ephemeral. I don't think it's just set pieces and action, you know, as a comic book fan, like this feels like reading a comic book as a kid where it's like, you could just have all these characters in the same story. It's epic. It's taking place on Earth and in space. And there's a genuinely credible threat, which we will get to in just a minute. So could this have been a movie of, you know, wall to wall fight scenes? Maybe it's not.
And I think they've gotten better with the action scenes too as time's gone on. I think that, you know, maybe it's indicative of having like a $300 to $400 million budget.
Yeah, right, but right.
They feel like this. Like when I see Thanos and Hulk battling at the beginning, like it feels like it has more weight to it than like it used to.
Yeah, I didn't love all of it. Like I don't love all the stuff on Wakanda.
Yeah, I don't think they've, this might sound crazy because people love Black Panther, and I like a lot of Black Panther also, but I don't feel like they've cracked Wakanda yet. I feel like it feels like Asgard and Thor 1 to me, like where I'm
okay.
Like, it hasn't taken on like the most interesting elements yet.
Okay.
I don't know.
I love it as like this insanely technologically advanced civilization where they put the shields up and Bucky is like, I love this place.
Yeah.
You know, like that's super cool.
Yeah.
Or that like this is where we're gonna take Vision because this is where the best scientist in the world
is. Shuri or Suri?
Yeah.
Yeah. Suri Cruz.
Cruz.
Daughter of Jack Cruz from Black
Panther. It's great to see her. You know, it's fun to see the Black Panther people show up. Black Panther doesn't have a lot to do, but like, okay, we just saw him in his own movie a few months ago.
Yeah.
And there is again, there are enough of these moments that get me so excited that like, even if everything didn't work, and I do think this is the best of the three Avengers movies.
Oh yeah. That's my favorite of the three. For sure. Yeah.
These moments, and they happen every few minutes, get me through the start of the Wakanda battle. There's a shot of everybody's charging, right? Not the scene from all the trailers and the,
I think I know where you're going.
And Captain America and Black Panther are out in front of everyone.
Yeah, they're just running just that much faster.
It's like, oh, because they're superhuman, but also because, like, this is who they are. And that's what these movies get.
Yeah.
That, again, they do always come back to who are these characters and what makes us like them and what makes them interesting.
I don't like bullies. I don't care where they're from.
Hey, so I'm joined now by Rob DiCristino. Hi, Rob.
What's up, Patrick?
Welcome back to the show. And you were just on last week. And we were having a conversation about stakes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and in particular in Avengers Infinity War. And Rob, you had something to say about that.
Like medium rare versus well done?
I mean, I guess if that's the way you want to go with this joke, then you can. you had texted me something, and what was it that you were saying about, you know, kind of, because obviously this is a movie that hinges on a lot of death, and that, you know, brings us up to Avengers 4 in theory. It's the big cliffhanger. So what were you saying about sort of death and what the stakes are in the MCU?
So one of the major like criticisms, you know, I think of the Marvel universe, cinematic universe so far has been this idea of this lack of real meaningful stakes or lack of real chances that the filmmakers are taking in terms of character deaths or, you know, like things like that. And everybody sort of assumed, I mean, I certainly assumed going in that, and we're in spoilers, right?
Oh, yes.
I assumed going in that we were going to lose Iron Man or Captain America for sure. I didn't think we were going to lose both of them, but I thought there was a fairly good chance that we were going to lose one of them. And the movie sort of telegraphed that, I thought, in the beginning when the opening scene with Pepper and Tony is like, man, wouldn't it be great to have a baby? I was like, all right, well, he's going to fucking die, isn't he? You know,
I'm so excited to retire in a week.
But the movie doesn't do that. And, you know, obviously there's time in 4, but I was thinking about, you know, does that matter? Right. And from a story perspective, I think to myself, like, well, you know, I'm not to put it too bluntly, but like, I'm kind of done with Tony Stark because I think his character arc is over. I think if you look at where he started in Iron Man 1 and to where he is now, where he's mentoring Spider-Man and he's, you know, he's doing all these things, he's fighting yet another cosmic disaster. Like, I think that it's, we're ready to move on without him as the central point. Do I think that means he has to die? No. And then, you know, the idea of Captain America is sort of in a similar way. So my point with all this is we were talking about, like, you know, does death equal stakes? Does death matter, or should it matter in a movie, an adventure movie like this, or, you know, in a comic book movie? Because obviously if you know, over the course of comic book history, and, you know, characters are always dying, being resurrected, brought back. And if we're looking at these movies as comic books that are going on and on in a serialized way, then really nothing should be permanent. Everything should always be malleable. Everything should always be able to come back. Characters should be able to go away and return in different forms and different, you know, functions and stuff. And I just very much fundamentally disagree with the idea that I've heard from a lot of friends who are really smart and who I agree with a lot about movies, and even in terms of certain complaints about this movie, which is that the movie has no stakes because the deaths at the end don't matter. They won't stick. They're going to be, you know, obviously we know there's going to be another Black Panther movie. Obviously we know there's going to be another Spider-Man movie. So therefore them disintegrating into the wind at the end of this movie, that doesn't carry any narrative weight. And I think that we're often too focused on thinking about movies that we forget to watch them. Because I was incredibly invested at the end of this movie. I mean, I was watching in particular, I'm not sure if you talked about this, Adam, but the moment where Peter Parker hugs Tony Stark and tells him he's not ready yet. Yeah. That was hard. I thought Tom Holland had two character beats as Peter Parker in this movie, and I thought they were both like they both leapt off the screen to me. The moment where he tells him he's an Avenger,
yeah,
and you just see Tom Holland have this look where he can't even keep it together. Anyway,
no, the point is, I love both of those.
Both those moments I thought were beautiful, and I very much disagree with this idea that, well, you know, they're coming back, so we don't get too concerned with it. Of course we know they're coming back. The movie telegraphs that. It tells us that when it shows us what the Time Stone does. Thanos literally does that. He brings a dead character back. The movie is communicating to us that that will happen. We get it. But the point is that the Avengers don't have the Time Stone or whatever they're going to use to change reality, whichever stone. They don't have it. They need to get it to bring them back and win. And that's the part of watching the movie that's fun and exciting. I don't know. Is it just me?
I don't disagree with you. I understand that criticism only to the extent that I think as a pop culture right now, we are sort of obsessed with that idea that death equals dramatic stakes. I think of in particular, The Walking Dead, which becomes, hey, it's either the mid-season finale or the season finale. Who are they going to kill? And that essentially the only way the story moves forward is when they kill off a major character. And that somehow is akin to having dramatic stakes, which I do not agree with. And that's permanent death, right? So if we're arguing that, you know, killing off a character permanently raises the dramatic stakes, well, I point you to The Walking Dead where, no, it does not. And I don't think that the characters dying are meant to raise the dramatic stakes in this movie. I really think it's just about clearing the table so that we can get back to this idea of the original Avengers having to figure out how to defeat Thanos without an army of superheroes behind them, because that's essentially what they have in this movie. And to get rid of most of them certainly puts their backs up against a wall. And I think that's what it's about, more than us feeling the loss of characters, even though I would argue that there are two specific moments, the one where Peter says, I'm not ready to go, and Gamora's death about halfway, two-thirds of the way through the movie, where I do feel like those moments are felt in a real way, and so that there is emotional weight to that, even if there isn't necessarily, you know, major storytelling weight to it, because we suspect both of them are going to come back.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's a lot about how we watch movies. It's about, you know, what we go into the movie looking for and expecting. And, you know, I like what you said about reconnecting the old Avengers together again, because the one, you know, the movie begins on a beat where Tony pulls the phone out and he's not quite ready to call Steve Rogers yet. And then the movie ends without them having reunited at all. It ends with them on different planets. And so this sets up the necessity of them working together. And it's one of the things I liked about all the compartmentalized stories that were going on. Again, I'm not sure what you talked about with Adam, but I love that this movie solves that Civil War problem where it's just all the characters standing in a circle in a big open space against green screen. They actually send them off on their own little journeys. And I loved the pairings because of the way, like, for example, Tony Stark kind of has to lead, and he's, you know, supposed to be the Han Solo, so he doesn't really want to lead in the way that he's forced to. Mm-hmm. But maybe that experience and having seen that loss grizzles him a bit to where he brings that into his conversation with Captain America. Like, we have to bury the hatchet, you know? So it does add stakes to the narrative, but just the idea that it does bring them all back together and makes them, makes it that much more necessary that they work together and so on, like you said, is part of the narrative that is affected by the deaths. But I don't think that, like you said, the deaths are all that matters.
So, this all seems horrible.
Okay, I'm sitting here now with a very special guest here to weigh in on Avengers Infinity War. Can you please introduce yourself, sir?
Hi. My name is Charlie Bromley.
Charlie Bromley. How old are you, Charlie Bromley?
9.
And who am I to you?
Your dad? I'm my dad?
Correct. I'm your dad. So this is my son, Charlie. We saw Avengers Infinity War yesterday. You were very excited to see this movie, yes?
Yes.
Did you like it?
I didn't like it. I loved it.
You didn't like it? You loved it. What did you love about it?
I don't know. I was kind of sad at when I saw Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
But then when all the characters showed up in Infinity War, I was like, yay!
So you were sad that the Avengers split up in Civil War?
Yeah.
But then you were happy to see them working together again in Infinity War.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite character in the movie?
I think Thor.
Thor?
Yeah.
He was pretty awesome in this movie.
Yeah.
I agree.
You dare threaten me, Thor, with so puny a weapon.
I think you mentioned, like, at another time how Marvel's usually really good at, like, kind of having moments. Mm-hmm. And I thought this one definitely had, like, its moments too. So, like you mentioned, like, when Captain America first appears out of the shadows, like, my crowd cheered also.
Yeah.
They cheered when, you know, the first time it says Wakanda, people cheered.
Of course.
When Thor shows up with the Stormbreaker.
Oh my God, when he shows
like,
up. Like,
when
Earth.
He shows up and
amazing.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. And Yeah, Thor kicks ass in this movie.
He does.
I'm really, really a big fan of Thor. I thought it was so funny near the beginning when they're trading, like, their family crisis resumes. And it's just, like, you don't even, like, realize it until it's just,
right.
Like, fuck, man. Like,
right.
A lot of stuff has happened to these guys.
But think about how many, and maybe this is a conversation that I'll have with somebody else that I talk about with this movie. Think about how many of these movies really do come back to father issues.
Yes.
I mean, Mm-hmm. Almost all of them, yeah. Like when you strip it away, is about this conflict between fathers and sons, you know, including this movie, because so much of the emotional spine of this movie is about Thanos and his daughter, Gamora, who may be the MVP of this movie.
Yeah.
I know everybody has a different MVP, but
yeah, we need to talk about Gamora.
Let's do it.
All right. This movie, 95% love.
Okay.
But I'm saving that 5% until I know that my girl is okay.
Yeah.
Because Gamora is, and this is a testament to Zoe Saldana, because she brings such soulfulness to these movies.
Yes.
Like, not just the Marvel movies, but like if you look at Avatar, you look at Star Trek. I mean, she's never playing down to any of the material. She's always like really like embedding it with like deep feeling. And whereas a lot of the other players in these movies like are bringing different important things to the table, she's bringing like a heart and soul to them. And when like this movie like sticks to me because I'm just so sad that they killed her off, at least temporarily. I don't know. My only hope is that because there's another Guardians movie on the slate, that she's going to come back.
So the theory that I've heard is that, in theory, she's dead. You know, because they've said, so all the characters who are dead before the snap, which is what they call it, Thanos essentially snapping his fingers and killing off half the planet, are dead, which means Vision stays dead.
Yeah.
Which I think the movie builds to. Like, I think it suggests...
Also,
Vision's gone.
Also, Vision's kind of, and I, no, not to be crass to Vision fans, but I feel like he served his purpose, so to speak.
Yeah, more or less. Movies. I mean, it's, you know, they didn't build a lot of time.
Like him and Scarlet Witch, it's like the Tab Cola of romances. Like, I don't care.
Well, and it's weird because they didn't really.
And she lost her accent.
She did lose her, and it's funny how they just kind of phase it out. Like, we'll hope nobody notices completely.
Yeah. It's like her and Nat got together and they're like, let's lose our accents. I'll take you to lunch.
In the comics, they are a long-term couple, you know, Vision and Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
And yet it's like, it's sort of hinted at in Civil War.
Yeah.
And then we catch up with them here and it's like, oh, they've had this romance and we're just getting the tail end of it. So it's like, it never really was allowed to exist. So on the one hand, I'm like, well, that's not fair, really. They, if Vision was around longer, maybe we could have more time with them as a couple and be a little bit more invested in them. Having said that, I think I wanted to call her Mary-Kate, which is so unfair. Elizabeth Olsen is so good in the scene where she has to kill him, and I think the dialogue that he says, you can't hurt me, I'll only be feeling you.
Yeah.
Is so fucking amazing. Yeah. And I almost feel like they don't make a big enough deal out of the fact that it's for nothing. Mm-hmm. That Thanos immediately reverses it and she has to watch him die a second time. She has to have felt killing him and live with that forever and then realize, oh, it was for nothing.
One thing I thought was a little bit kind of, I don't know. I mean, and it's a movie, so like it's not a big deal. But I there was a number of times where I'm just like, come on, guys, like, he's just going to kill you after he gets the stone anyway.
Yeah,
like,
right.
just sacrifice yourself so you don't have to give up the stone. It's like, because I think that happens maybe one time too many, because I think it happens with, like, three of the stones, where it's like, I will kill this person unless you give me the stone. And anyways. But,
so. Yeah.
But, no, I.
So, oh, sorry. Yeah. So, Vision, Loki. Heimdall. That they would be dead. And technically, Gamora should be dead as well because she died before the snap.
Yeah.
However, in reading a little bit about the movie after I saw it, there's some thinking that actually she is trapped inside the Soul Stone, much like Red Skull, by the way, which...
That was great.
How fucking great was that? Like,
was it Hugo
just,
Weaving doing the voice?
I do not believe so.
I was wondering that.
But I just was so excited about that. Like, there was such a fun surprise that it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, Red Skull has been living here forever.
He's on Eternia.
Right. And I had to, like, turn to my son and explain who it was because he hasn't seen Captain America.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, that's Red Skull. And, you know, because the we get to see the child Gamora later on.
I think those scenes are really good, too.
I mean, really good. And I think speak to what's super interesting about Thanos, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
So the idea is that she is trapped in the Soul Stone and can be gotten out. And then people, of course, are speculating, like, okay, so does Steve Rogers give his life so that mm-hmm. she can get out? You know, who of the original Avengers is going to die in part four? My hope is none. I don't need any more Avengers to die. I got to see most of them die in this movie. I'm fine if none of them do.
What if the next movie is called The Avengers, The Search for Gamora?
I'm into it.
I'm into it, too. No, I just love Gamora. Like, it's the thing, like I mentioned before, like, the Guardians are, like, becoming, it's slowly becoming, like, one of my favorite franchises. So I'm just like, these could go on forever. Yeah. Just like Star Trek, like, I don't want you screwing with my hashtag family. So, and the fact that, like, and I'm a mark for, like, the I love you scenes in movies.
Yes.
But, like, when she says, like, I love you more than anything, and he says, I love you, I'm just like, oh my God.
Yes.
Like, I was melting. Like, it's so sweet.
And that's, again, why she's so much the emotional spine of this movie. All the stuff with her and Star-Lord is great. His whole, like, I told you to go right before he has to kill her. Again, we get another scene of somebody having killed a person they love.
Yeah.
Is so great, as is all of her stuff with Thanos and it's that relationship, you know, and her sort of hatred of him, and then the connection between her and
Nebula?
Amy Pond, Nebula, who again isn't in the movie much, but enough, you know, and kind of interesting.
Thanos is a really way more interesting villain than I thought that he was
so
going
much.
To be.
Well, because he wasn't anything. You know, we've been getting these little teases of him.
Yeah,
like,
and
who gives a shit?
I'm not familiar with the comic book history of Thanos. So,
well, and they changed his motivation.
Oh, they did?
So in the comics, he's in love with death. And I don't mean the act of dying. I mean literally the character of death. It's a woman. Like, you know, and he wants to impress her, which is why he wants to kill half the world. Because, hey, look, I'm going to kill all these people and then you'll love me.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so much less interesting than what he's trying to do here.
No, it's so, it, like, the fact that they made him just the zealot is so interesting because it makes him that much more of a, like, really creepy and credible threat, because it's just like, no, he's unbending. Like, he
believes
he's
in
the
something.
Hero. He thinks he's the hero of his story.
Exactly.
And it's not like a Doc Ock thing where it's just like, he's sympathetic. It's like he's a cult leader and like he needs to be stopped, like, no matter what. It just makes it that much bigger. Because one of the things I was worried before the movie was, I'm like, how can like 70 Avengers not be able to take down one guy? And in this one, it's just like, oh, no, I get it. Like, there's, it's not just he's a brute. It's like there's a lot of psychological stuff that he can do, too. And it's really kind of just testament to their treatment of the character and then Josh Brolin's performance that
he's
always feels like threatening.
Yeah.
And even like his minions feel threatening. It's not like more so than
they're a little generic, I think. But
I had to shut off my brain a little bit, though, at the beginning, because I was getting like the Bounty Hunters and Masters of the Universe vibe a little bit.
Right.
And then I was just like, oh, that's Ninja Turtle guy. That's Steppenwolf's girlfriend from Justice League. The dude, his second in command, the Ebony Maw.
Yeah.
I kept thinking of, have you seen Lilo and Stitch?
Yeah.
All right. It's like the woman at the beginning where she's like, I banish you, experiment 626. I'm like, that's her brother.
Is he the one who gets blown out into the airlock?
Yeah, the
from
aliens.
Really
thing. I love
movie,
that
aliens.
Shot.
Oh my god,
so great!
It really is.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
What did you think of Thanos?
He was evil. He was like really, really bad.
But do you think that he thought he was doing something good?
No.
Really, he knew he was doing evil. Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
I'm Groot.
So let me ask you this. Did you have a favorite moment in the film, and who is your MVP of the movie?
There were so many. I really loved, again, I already mentioned that the Peter Parker moments. I thought that the decision to pair Rocket with Thor was inspired to an extent. I think there's, I liked the side of Peter Quill that was shown in this. I I honestly, Brolin. I mean, I thought Thor was the main character. Thanos. Thanos was the main character, right? Like, I really thought that it was. I was very impressed with how much of this movie was about Thanos, and it was about his intentions and his hang-ups and his insecurities. And I mean, the movie ends with the graduate shot. Like, I did not see that coming at all. And yeah, I think Brolin carried it well.
Dance off, bro. Me and you.
Yeah. So Thanos, what's so interesting about him, and I agree, and the effects work, you know, I was down on in some of the trailers. I was like, oh, he doesn't look great, and that's going to be distracting because, again, they didn't crack it in Justice League.
No.
That was a really bad effect executed really badly.
Yeah.
And I think with Thanos, it's a good enough effect, mm-hmm. Bolstered by Josh Brolin's performance and how interested we are in the character, that I can overlook some of the, like, well, this is a CGI character.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what makes him scary isn't just, you know, because what's so generic about so many of the Marvel villains is, well, they want power. Well, they want to kill everyone just to have ultimate power. And it's like, whatever, that's meaningless. Who gives a shit? Even Loki in the first movie is like, I want power. And this is like, I want power as a means to an end because I believe in something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes him scary, is that sort of tunnel vision belief in I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah. And even at the end, like that last scene, he's completely by himself.
Right.
This is he's the only one who wants this.
And what has he given up to do it? And what is the cost? And in some ways, I'm retracting what I said in terms of this not being a movie, because in some ways it is. It's just that it's Thanos' movie.
Yeah.
Because if you watch it in terms of, well, who has a beginning, a middle, and an end, he's the only one who does.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the movie is him winning and getting what he wants. But again, at what cost? He had to murder his daughter. He had to wipe out half the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Which he doesn't seem to 100% want to do.
Yeah.
It's just that this is the way it has to be. And the stuff with Gamora and how heavily that weighs on him is so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely like, I know I started out like sounding critical of the movie, but as we talk about it, I like it even more.
You have reached the life model decoy of Tony Stark. Please leave a message.
All right, I am now joined by the managing editor of Daily Dead, the co-host of Corpse Club, a top critic, the Rondo-nominated author, Heather Wixon. Hi, Heather.
Hey, Patrick. How's it going?
Good. Did you enjoy Infinity War?
I did. It's funny because, like, I've been living with it now since, like, Friday, and we were talking about this, like, last night. Like, it's the one movie that, like, really I keep not being able to get out of my head, and I don't know if that was just because it was such an overload of stuff. Not in a bad way, but in a good way, because
it's a big movie. There's a lot of movie there.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because, like, you know, this is like something that, you know, a lot of us have been sort of 10 years in the making, and it's been leading to this. But what's funny is, like, when the first Iron Man came out, I did not give a crap about it, because I grew up a DC fan. I didn't know much about Marvel as a kid. I knew Batman and Superman as a kid. All I really knew was, like, the Hulk TV show, and I get Spider-Man comics.
Mm-hmm.
So when they announced Iron Man, I was like, all right, I'm gonna go see it, you know, because that's what you do. And I liked it a lot. But if you would have told me 10 years ago, after the first Iron Man, that here I would be, like, some 18 movies later, like, completely not being able to get, like, this 2.5 hour movie out of my head after 48 hours, I'd been like, you are crazy.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I really did. And it was just, it's one of those crazy experiences. Like, when everything was done, like, the whole theater, it was just like this stunned silence. And we were like, we knew we enjoyed it, but we were like, holy crap, they went for it. And I'm really glad they did, because I think they had to kind of, even though we know it can all kind of be undone,
right,
I think we needed to see it done just to know that they're like, yeah, we will do this. Do you really want these people to die? You joke about it, but do you really want that to happen?
I don't, you know, and I worry that that's something that they're going to do in the next movie as well. And I don't I don't need that. Like, whatever. So you had said something on Twitter that I thought was really interesting. And as I was trying to think of different angles for different people to talk about on this episode, you had talked about how much these movies mean to your niece and sort of how it has connected you in another way. Obviously, you're connected in a million ways already, but like it's this other thing that you guys can share. And I guess I just wanted to talk about sort of, and you just touched upon it, you know, that it changed you from a person who didn't really care about Iron Man. It was just, okay, well, this is the new big movie coming out. I'll check it out, I guess, to somebody who's very invested in this series and in these characters and what happens to them and is affected, you know, when half of them die at the end of the movie. So I just wanted to talk about like what these movies have come to mean to us and you specifically.
Yeah, it's funny because my, you know, my niece Molly, which is Jenna's daughter, she's 12 now. So for her, like these movies have been her whole life.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's, you know, it's really cool that one that like, you know, Jenna and her husband, Matt, like got Molly caught up on these as soon as they knew they were age appropriate for her because she's super obsessed with them. In fact, we have a game, like every time I come home, she'll pull out like some new Marvel movies and she'll be like, okay, did you interview this person? Did you interview this person? So that's like a game that we actually play. And you know, so for me, it's been really fun because, you know, she's 12 now. So she's going to be in a year or so, she's going to be way too cool for any of us because that's just how it's going to go. And, you know, it'll be, you know, gift cards and brief texts and, you know, all this kind of stuff because she's going to be a teenager and she doesn't really need us grown ups for a few years. But just seeing like how much the series means to her, and I mentioned this to you before, like this is like her Star Wars. Like she loves the Star Wars movies that come out, but it's, that hasn't been a complete part of her childhood the way that the Marvel movies have. And one, it's cool because she's a girl and she's growing up in a day and age where she's not getting shunned for it. Which is awesome as somebody who grew up basically with like a Batman hat on for like 5 years straight. And everybody be like, oh, you should be like a girl, whatever. you know, so it's cool that she's growing up with this environment that these things like have an importance to them. And it's funny because like, you know, her favorite thing has always been Spider-Man, and she's loved every incarnation of Spider-Man. Like her first introduction, of course, was the Tobey Maguire movies. And then she went through the Andrew Garfield phase. And then getting Tom Holland, like who I think she has like the hugest crush on. So it's really adorable. But just seeing like how much she's invested in them. And like, she has actually with her friends, a Spider-Man fan club at her school, and it's a bunch of girls and they all love Spider-Man. Like, how cool is that? I didn't have that. Like, I couldn't even get girls to talk about like anything I liked when I was a kid.
Ooh, me either.
Well, yeah, but that was different. I mean, unless you're talking about like talking on the phone for Freddy Krueger,
oh,
then there
right.
you go.
Yes, that's right.
But you know, so for me, it's been really fun to like see what these characters really mean. Or like, she's been working on her Spider-Man script for 2 years, where she's Spider-Man's secret sister who pops up. She's actually written herself into the script. And I just, you realize like, you know, when I was sitting there in the theater and there's like, it's every age group in there. It's little kids. It's like medium sized kids. It's grownups. It's older folks. And it's so rare. Like, you know, and again, like I know we get this with Star Wars, but like just to see quote unquote comic book movies being embraced like this by all generations is really awesome. And you can tell it meant a lot to people. And like, this is something else that really struck me when I was watching it. Cause I was sitting in second row. So I had front row people in front of me. And when the Wakanda music hit, I saw three different kids do the Black Panther stance in their
awesome.
Seat. And I like geeked out. I was like, that is so effing cool. But it's just, you know, it's really nice because, like, again, I wanted to go see Infinity Wars this weekend because, you know, spoilers are going to be everywhere. But I also knew that Molly was going to see it on Friday, and I figured it would be a rough, like, viewing for her in terms of, you know, she doesn't understand it quite like how we understand it. She's getting there, but, you know, it's still pretty impactful when you're watching your favorite character sort of float away into the nothing. Mm-hmm. But like, as we were saying, like, as soon as I saw the Spider-Man scene, I like my heart sank, and it sank for two reasons. One, because it was just a really sad gut punch of a moment that I was like, oh, you guys are just going to give it to us right now. But then I knew how she was going to feel in that moment. And I think this might have been like her first real heartbreak in a movie, even though he's going to come back and he's got a sequel and all that. But I think for her to watch that moment was like that first, like, maybe this is her E.T. moment, you know, because I don't know that she's really had many of those, you know, where she realizes like, man, like eventually in your fandom, you're going to have to learn to let things go. And, you know, we're grownups. We've been doing that for decades now. But for some kids, like, this is the first time that they're going to have to say goodbye to characters that they truly love. And I think for me, that's like a huge thing.
I mean, it reminds me, you know, it was, speaking of it being hard to say goodbye to characters you love, like, think about how hard it was when we watched Laurie Strode killed off at the beginning of Halloween Resurrection.
Well, that was hard to watch for a lot of reasons. but yeah, that was...
I'm kidding. Obviously, it was terrible. I think I certainly have been guilty, and I know I talk about this somewhere else on the podcast, but I certainly have been guilty of expressing some amount of fatigue with just, again, it's not about the movies themselves, because I always enjoy the movies. Certainly, like around Doctor Strange, I kind of was like, it feels like the same beats, you know, as previous movies. The origin story, it just starts to feel the same. But my fatigue is more around, you know, how much of the internet and the conversation around movies in general is devoted purely to these superhero movies, you know. But again, I love them. I go see them opening weekend all the time. I get excited for them. And I think one of the things, you know, there are a lot of people who are a little bit too cool for these movies now, who some are just legitimately not into them. Some are just real dismissive of them. James Cameron sort of famously earlier this week was shitting all over them. And I think one of the things that gets overlooked when people do that is how much these movies do mean to their audiences. Like, this movie is, as we're talking, you know, the most successful opening weekend of all time. And it's not just because people wanted to go watch superheroes fight. We've been doing that for 10 years. We've been doing that since Batman, right? Yeah. It has everything to do with our attachment to these specific characters. Nobody's going to Transformers because, like, they love Optimus Prime or because they love Mark Wahlberg's character, Cade Yeager, which is his actual name in those movies. Hey, Optimus Prime, I'm Cade Yeager. Nobody's going to that because they love those characters, right? They're going because, like, ooh, robots are going to fight and it's going to be dumb for 2 hours and then I'm going to forget it. But right. These movies don't vanish from our brains as much. And we want to keep going back because we're invested in Tony Stark, because we're invested in Steve Rogers, because we're invested in Peter Parker now. And so the chance to see them all together is a big deal to a lot of people, not just us who have been, you know, reading comics or into this kind of stuff since we were kids, but like people who just got into these movies since the MCU started 10 years ago, it means a lot to them. You know, my wife's cousin doesn't really go to movies ever, but when a new Marvel movie comes out, he's there opening night. Like, he's obsessed with these movies, and it's not because they're meaningless, right? Obviously, yeah. He's connecting to something in them. And I just feel like I wish sometimes that was a bigger part of the conversation.
Well, and I think what's interesting, too, is if you look at it in terms of like sort of the respective like mini franchises that you have in here in terms of like the Iron Man films, the Thor films, the Captain America films, they seem to, it's like the first one sort of does its job in establishing stuff. And then the second one kind of falters a little bit, except for Captain America, which, you know, that was, you know, Winter Soldier is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's had the benefit of the Russo brothers sort of guiding, you know, that whole series. But, you know, Thor 2, it's okay. Iron Man 2, okay. Yeah, right. But then you come back with like Iron Man 3, Thor Ragnarok, and then Civil War. And it's just so interesting to me that, you know, I think once Marvel kind of figured out the type of voices that they needed to get into these films to start really digging into like the stuff that fans care about, You know, and bringing up these different stories. So it wasn't just the same beat by beat stuff. And I think that's why, like, that's why I loved Thor Ragnarok so much. It's probably one of my favorites of the, of all of these films, because it didn't feel like we were just building to the same stuff over and over again.
Right.
And I would even say, like, bringing in somebody like James Gunn for the Guardians films, mm-hmm. Helped those films immensely, because I feel like if they just would have had another, I almost said gun for hire, but they kind of do, a gun without two ends, you know, and just brought in a guy who was there to sort of adhere to, you know, sort of a overarching mythology instead of really being passionate about it and really understanding like the humor to things, you know. And that's the thing that people forget too, is the comics, they had those beats of humor to them. And, you know, so I think when you see stuff, like for me, like one of the best parts of Civil War is like when Falcon's sitting in the car with Bucky and he's like, can you move your seat up? And he's like, no. And I'm like, that to me is like one of the best moments of that entire film in a completely kick-ass action movie.
Right.
And I just think it's really interesting how they've brought in these different talents that you wouldn't necessarily expect, you know. And then you have like, you know, I think it's Ryan Coogler, right? With Black Panda, Black Panda. I'm making up my own stuff now. Black Panther.
Yeah.
You know, and just completely giving fans something wildly different than anything that they've experienced before, and giving us different stakes. Wasn't world-ending stakes, but it was very personal stakes. And I just feel like it's a really exciting time to be a fan. And I think they're really coming into their own as a studio, which is weird to say after 18 movies, but I think like it makes me really excited to continue to be a fan. Like it makes me want to go back and rewatch the earlier movies, but I know that it's almost like a series that kind of has gotten better. It's like aged like fine wine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'm stupidly excited for Ant-Man, which I never again would have thought I would say that because of everything that happened with Edgar Wright.
Mm-hmm. No, I am too. And I was, you know, somewhat lukewarm on Ant-Man the first time I saw it. I like it more now, having revisited it, but I'm really looking forward to the sequel. I have to believe that Marvel is a little bit nervous, you know, because this essentially ends Phase 3, and Phase 4 is sort of uncharted, you know, because we're going to be wrapping up most of their big characters. Not all, and they've done a good job of seeding some new characters. I mean, obviously, people are really interested in Black Panther. They would not have been 10 years ago, you know? And so
definitely not Black Panda.
Not so much Black Panda, which is like the weird Asylum ripoff that you get at Redbox. But so he could show up in Phase 4 and they know, okay, we've got something to hang our hat on, right? Because if they're done with Thor and Captain America and Iron Man and possibly the Hulk, oh my gosh, what are they, you know, it's really like a blank slate. And yet it's not, because they're going to be introducing Captain Marvel. They still have Spider-Man. They have Black Panther. Like, I don't know that Falcon's going to get his own movie, but
Black Widow will, though, finally.
Yeah, right. I heard that.
Jesus.
And they can, and it's cool that they can take chances and introduce characters that, again, 10 years ago, I was like, who's going to go see a Thor movie? Like, I was excited about the idea, but I was positive they could not pull it off. Like, they were not even going to pull off the original Avengers, because I felt like there's no audience for a Thor movie. And every time I've been proven wrong, because, and now they can take these chances and introduce lesser known characters. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, like, was not a well known comic at all.
It's pretty recent too. It's not something that's we've collected. Like, I know that there's been like references to the Guardians like throughout like, you know, the last 30 or 40 years, but I think Guardians of the Galaxy itself was something that happened in the 2000s. So these aren't even
I think it goes back further than that.
Well, I think, but in terms of these characters specifically, because for a long time, like Gamora and Drax were actually against each other.
Right.
There's like a whole storyline with like something with like Thanos, which I looked up, and the only reason I looked that up like years ago with the first Guardians, because I had no idea what the hell they were.
Yeah, right.
I really didn't. I just knew it was James Gunn and Vin Diesel was playing a talking tree and Bradley Cooper was being a raccoon. And I was like, well, why the hell not?
Right. So, but like on paper, can you imagine a movie like that being greenlit, you know, in 2008 when they were starting? And so each time I sort of doubt the audience's ability or willingness to follow where Marvel is going to take them, because they're taking them to some weird places. And yet every time the movies are good enough that audiences will follow them. And so I am excited for Phase 4 that hopefully, you know, Marvel has earned the right to take some chances and introduce some new stuff.
Yeah, I was trying to think of like, okay, so who haven't we seen? Like, and like, I think there's like Silver Surfers out there. I obviously they're going to probably bring in Adam, I'm guessing Warlock, because of the stuff that was at the end of Guardians 2, which is interesting because I think he's sort of anti-Thanos, or maybe he's sort of the lesser Thanos.
He's in the original Infinity Gauntlet. He's anti-Thanos.
Okay. With these things, it's like you could talk about this storyline and then all of a sudden, well, how about in this, you know, run of comics, there was actually all this. So it's like, you know, the fact that they've actually been able to keep any kind of continuity in the movies is a miracle. Cause there's so much to out there to like, to juggle. It's like, how do you decide which ones you're going to follow? Yeah, I don't know, like, what other characters. I mean, I know obviously there's the stuff that's happening with like, the New Mutants. I don't know if that's been held because maybe they're going to find a way to bring it in. I would love if they could figure out a way to bring, you know, some of the X-Men stuff into this. Cause I mean, it only makes sense. I mean, that happens, you know, in the comics. So like, okay, let's do this. I mean, you know, in a perfect world, of course, we'd have some crazy weird Deadpool moment, but that's never going to happen. Although I mentioned that to you, I'm like, why are these little kids laughing at Deadpool? Have they seen Deadpool? What is wrong with their parents?
I think a lot of them have, because again, no, it's a superhero movie, so I'll take my kids.
Yeah, but like, I think you can see Ryan Reynolds' testicles in one scene. Not that I was looking, but I'm pretty sure, like, I don't know that a 7-year-old needs to see all that, but maybe they do. Whatever. I guess I saw worse when I was a kid. But no, it's exciting because I don't really know what's to come. I don't know much about Captain Marvel. So I'm like, but I just know it's Brie Larson and I'm here for it. So let's do it. Like, you know, it was actually funny because I remember like before the post credit scene, I was like, you know, I was like, Nick Fury has kind of become this huge afterthought over the last couple of movies. And oh, there he is. Oh, wait, never mind. There he goes. It was like, see you later, Samuel Jackson. Enjoy that $250,000 paycheck for like a minute and a half.
Well, look at it this way. At least a giant shark didn't come out and eat him.
Yeah, this is the movie that like really it kind of hit home what an accomplishment all these things have been. Because
it's amazing what they've done. And by the way,
real quick though, what I was going to say was, okay, like, it's almost like the symptom, like, because I'm guilty of saying, like, all superhero movies are ruining blah, blah, blah. But yeah, that's like saying, it's starting to get to the point where it's like you're blaming Jaws. It's like everything else
yeah,
is the
true.
Thing
right.
that, like, screwed yeah. this up, trying to do rehashes of
yeah.
it. So, sorry. Didn't mean
no, that. And that's basically what I was going to yeah. say, is that, yeah, I think overall movies have suffered.
Yeah.
And part of the problem is that I read somebody say this recently, and it's something that you and I have shared before, but they articulated in such a way that what we're tired of isn't like the number of superhero movies, mm-hmm. even though there are, you know, let's say 3 a year, or yeah. now if we get 2 from DC, there's 5 a year. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, there's also 5 comedies. We're not like too many comedies.
Yeah.
The problem is how heavily they're covered, mm-hmm. How much we know about everything all the time. And there's a new trailer and has 2 seconds of new footage. And let's compare it to the Japanese trailer, which has this one different shot and yeah. every website has to post about it.
Yeah.
And somewhere somebody recently said that like the dialogue around these movies sucks up all the oxygen to talk about any other movies. Mm-hmm. And that's what's exhausting.
Yeah.
Me, and I think you, and I think people who feel yeah. a little burned out.
I think the people who cover movies, and I'll include myself in this, but it's just they need to do a better job of spreading the wealth. Because
sure.
it happens to, like, it's not just the superhero stuff, but I completely agree with you. It's like with Oscar stuff, it's like, this is the front
of course,
runner.
Right.
Fuck everyone else. It's like,
right.
there's 4 other nominees.
Right.
So
right.
it's like stuff like that.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's an amazing accomplishment. Like,
yeah.
again, and the fact that they continue to pull it off
mm-hmm.
is crazy.
And it's quality. Like,
yeah.
there's been some, like, not great ones, but there's
yeah.
been, like, a fair amount of quality control. And
yeah.
there's not a lot of dogs, really any dogs in, like, the 19 movies. And there's also something to be said about this is, like, mainstream entertainment that works for kids and adults.
It's a little dark for kids, I realized.
This particular
yesterday,
one.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, this particular one. But I mean, like,
yeah,
it's, you know, it's the best of that kind of popular blockbuster
right.
filmmaking.
Right.
So why am I getting so mad at it?
Yeah. Well, and it's weird that we have this existing concurrently with Star Wars.
Yeah.
Both owned by Disney, by the way, because they
own everything.
They have all the money.
Yeah.
Because I would say that, you know, this is comparable to what Star Wars was back in the day in terms of, you know, populist, big budget, special effects entertainment done right, you know, and sort of that long form storytelling. But we have Star Wars going at the same time. So now we have these two kind of ongoing series. Obviously, there are many ongoing series, but like these are the two that people care about the most.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say, or have the most fans, which is why they're the two franchises that continue to like topple each other for box office records. Eventually, it's just going to be all Marvel and Star Wars in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the ending.
Yeah. I got a question for you about it's regarding the ending. So there's the scene where Doctor Strange looks into all of the possible outcomes of the future.
Yep.
And he basically hints that like, this was the only way.
Right.
So
he's the key.
Do you think he's deliberately like withholding information?
Yeah.
So that it can only play out the way that he knows it so that nobody else can alter it.
Yes.
Okay.
I think when he gives the stone, it's so out of character.
Yeah.
Because he spent the entire movie saying, I'll let any of you die. Like, there's nothing more important than protecting this stone.
Yeah.
And then he hands it over to Thanos to spare Tony Stark, which, like, they haven't liked each other.
Yeah.
One of my favorite early lines was, like, protecting your reality. I can't remember the first part of it.
Yeah, something douchebag.
And it's like, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
By the way, Doctor Strange as a movie was fine. Like,
I think he's really good in this.
He's super... I like him way more here than in his movie.
Correct.
And part of that, I think, is because now he's the character that he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And the scene where he's pulling out the stops and like fighting Thanos is awesome. Where he's just like doing cool shit and there's a bunch of him. Like, it's so neat.
Yeah.
I
love the part with Star-Lord where he's just like, boom, and then jumps through like the wormhole. That's so great.
All the stuff with the Guardians is so good. You know,
I love the Guardians so much.
Me too. And again, it's so fun. I was worried about...
I've been standing here for an hour.
Bring it.
I laugh so hard when he's just like, you're one sandwich away from being fat. he's like a pirate mixed with an angel.
Pirate mixed with an angel. I was worried about them being brought into the bigger Marvel universe because part of me was like, I kind of like them off on their own. Don't sully them by bringing it.
Yeah.
But man, how it was just exciting to see them interacting with all these characters. And it was really fun. And like, again, made this universe so much bigger by connecting it.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly enough, you know, we had space and we had Asgard and we had Wakanda. And now, you know, all of these things are connected by characters traveling back and forth, and it's awesome. So I think Doctor Strange handing over the stone is part of the one reality in which they win.
I think so too.
And so him saying it's the only way
and also
is the key to the whole thing.
And also, this was maybe the first one that I can think of where the Avengers as a whole kind of didn't have the hubris that they usually do, that they could face off any challenge.
Yeah.
So maybe like the fact that they need to do that regroup is key to them winning.
Well, and I didn't even put it together until I got home that all the ones who survived are the OG Avengers.
Except for Rocket.
Right.
Yeah. That was the only one I could think of that like still made it. Didn't Okoye live?
I mean, it's not only the Avengers, but OG Avengers all lived.
Oh, did they? So it's Hulk,
Black Widow,
Tony Stark, Captain America, and who am I forgetting?
Thor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And theoretically, Hawkeye, who's not in this movie.
Yeah.
Which, did anyone miss?
Do you think Hawkeye and Ant-Man were a little bit sad that Fury wasn't like, I'll send the distress signal to you guys?
I think.
I'm going to send it to Brie Larson.
My guess, by the way, that's exciting. I knew what it was going to say, but I still got excited when it came up.
Yeah, And then is Do you know if Captain Marvel is supposed to take place after this, or is it before?
It's taking place in the 90s.
Ooh,
yeah.
90s soundtrack.
Some images just came out of Brie Larson and Nick Fury, where he has like
okay.
a full head of hair. And like, so it takes place before this. So my guess is, and I think it comes out, what, like next February?
Yeah, March or February, okay. something like that.
So my guess is we get the 90s. It's going to be Captain America Civil War, where it's yeah. like we get 90s Captain Marvel post-credit okay. scene is her getting the distress signal yeah. while somebody dissolves in front of her, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're going to get with Ant-Man, too, because Ant-Man, I think, takes place, or Ant-Man and the Wasp, rather, I believe takes place after Civil War, oh, okay. before Infinity War. So I'm guessing post-credit scene is somebody dissolves, you know. And so that, so I, my hope is that Ant-Man and the Wasp show up in
yeah.
Avengers 4.
This movie's so good that it's lifted my anticipation for Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Honestly,
which
the,
I could
the,
not care less.
Oh,
about
see, I really liked the trailer.
I just don't like Ant-Man. Like I liked him in Civil War.
Okay,
but the first movie, I just was like, it felt just like a Peyton Reed movie to me. Like,
okay, and, I liked it better when I just rewatched it okay. like a week or two ago, and I actually yeah. had way more fun with it.
Okay,
because it's different enough in its tone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because I was watching all these other Marvel movies and I'm like, oh, this is a kind of a change of pace.
Yeah.
And I really like the trailer for Ant-Man and the Wasp, and so okay. I'm weirdly excited about it. I'm also weirdly excited about Deadpool 2, and I only kind of like Deadpool, but I really like that trailer.
Did you see the trailer before
No.
Before Avengers?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to ruin anything.
Okay.
So I won't say anything.
All right.
But I think there's like a beat in the new ads that I've seen for Deadpool 2 that I think is so funny.
Okay.
That I just like really, really dig it. That makes me more excited.
I'm excited about it. And again, it looks like
it's got the girl from Atlanta.
It's got the girl from Atlanta and it's got the kid from Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yes.
And it looks like they're kind of like fighting to protect him or save him, or I don't know the plot.
Yeah, I don't either.
I get that gist from the trailer. And like just that gives me hope because it's like, oh, it will be interesting to watch Deadpool fight for something.
Mm-hmm. They should make Josh Brolin have to be the villain in every Marvel movie from now on. Like, it doesn't matter. He's like, I'm Loki.
Yeah, right? That's fine. I'll take it.
Yeah.
You sound pretty sprightly for a dead guy.
Okay, I am joined now by the great Stephanie Crawford. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Did you like Infinity War?
I did quite a bit, yes. Did you, the great Patrick Bromley?
I'm the decent Patrick Bromley. There's a great Patrick Bromley. He lives in London. And I am the decent. I'm just hoping something happens to that guy. I did. I liked the movie. I thought it was fun, and I thought they pulled off what they were trying to pull off.
Oh, that's vague. I like that.
Luckily, there's going to be a whole lot of me talking about it elsewhere in this episode, so you'll get to hear too much of what I think of the movie. But one of the things that you and I talked about a little bit offline was you had mentioned this idea that more than once the character's own personal feelings – get in the way of what it is that they are trying to accomplish. And we're talking spoilers, so you can, you know, talk about anything you want. But I really liked that idea and was hoping you could pursue that a little bit.
Absolutely. Okay. Basically, if you love someone, you will doom the planet. And that's what I took away from Avengers Infinity War.
So the answer is don't love anyone?
I mean, you can, you know, there's just so many consequences, but.
So, obviously, we have the instance, you know, most notably of Peter Quill and Gamora, because there's a point at which they realistically could defeat Thanos and get the Infinity Gauntlet off of him, and yet Peter Quill can't let his feelings about Gamora leave them aside for a minute, and so interferes and screws everything up. What other examples can you point to?
Well, you took away my big one.
That's the big one. That is the big one.
Well, we also have Gamora. She herself does that for her sister Nebula. Gamora is completely right to sacrifice herself to keep the Stone's location secret. But despite their rocky background, she can't let more torture and death happen to Nebula. Mm-hmm. And she leads Daddy Warbucks right to the location.
Now, in the case of Vision and Scarlet Witch, she does make that sacrifice and is willing to kill him. I mean, actually, Peter Quill is earlier as well. It's just that reality bends so that bubbles shoot out of the gun. But she's able to make that sacrifice, and yet it's for nothing.
Here's the thing.
Okay.
She put it off.
Okay. She kept...
So...
Had she done it sooner...
That's kind of the impression I was getting. And believe me, I did not walk in here going like, all right, let's see how these people caring about each other is going to mess this movie up. That's not how I was coming in. But I do think they really held on her holding. And even when you could see the resolve in her face that she was ready, I think it was actually very deliberately timed to show that her waiting affected it.
And yet, isn't Vision's line about "you can't hurt me, I'll only be feeling you," is that not one of the greatest lines ever?
That was incredibly sweet. Right? I really like that.
It was like heartbreaking, but also the most romantic thing ever.
Thanos comes and crushes his entire head. So.
Right. But when you brought that up, it reminded me of what I love about the Marvel movies, and really going back to Marvel Comics. And I know you and I have, again, spoken prior to this recording that you were more of a DC person growing up. What I've always loved about the Marvel Comics, and what I think has carried over to the movies, is how much of these superheroes' personalities, backgrounds, beliefs, flaws, more than anything, really inform who they are. And I think that's something that the movies have carried over really, really well, that these are, for lack of a better expression, very human superhumans. And so they do make these major mistakes, and it's always informed by who their characters are and not just like, ooh, I missed the shot. It's not some plot driven thing. It's almost always informed by them as people.
No, absolutely. It's a weakness within their world of the plot, but it's a huge strength for them as characters. You have your heroic side where, every life matters. No one's going to get left behind. And then, their loves, their egos, their weaknesses, that playing in is wonderful. And I agree with you, this like catching up with these movies and how much I enjoyed Infinity War, it actually made me feel bad about predominantly reading DC for so long and missing out on a lot of Marvel, because I'm like, I really like how they're balancing. There's so many characters, there's so many huge set pieces, and so much going on that you have to have that strength and distinction within every character. And you're absolutely right, it informs every decision. So when I say weakness, it's weakness, leading to things not going well for them. But when you're just looking at from a movie standpoint, it's probably the best part of the film.
Yeah. I know that I haven't read comics in a long time. I don't know how Marvel comics are these days. I know that the writing in DC comics is very strong, but the characters are always what I was drawn to in terms of Marvel, because they had such a normal side to them. And I know that that was sort of their ingenuity, right? That Spider-Man lives in regular New York and is trying to make it as a photographer and worries about his girlfriend. And so they have such a normal side to them. And that has always that's always what has endeared me to them. And again, I think that's all of my favorite moments in Infinity War are not fights. They're not a display of power, with the exception of maybe when Thor comes down to Earth and wipes out like all those monsters.
I mean, it is a superhero movie. We right. A degree of that.
And there's definitely cool stuff, but all of my favorite moments have to do with these specific personalities that have been developed over the last 10 years of these movies kind of bouncing off one another.
Yeah, I think a lot of, I've seen a few reviews after I watched the movie, and they're trying to tack on that, well, you need to know all this background, and they don't do any introductions in this film. You just get thrown right into it. Well, of course you do. We all know how deep into this we are. And it doesn't feel like a crazy mishmash. There's, you know, weak points, but mostly I think they used everything to build these relationships and characters up beautifully.
I understand the criticism in terms of, well, it doesn't really function as a standalone movie, because there's validity to that. But I also don't understand why it should serve as an entry point. Why do we expect this to be, hey, how come just anyone can't come along and enjoy this? Why do I have to have seen all the other movies? You know, like I kind of goes with the territory at this point.
Right. Every movie can't be everything, guys. Give it a break. We all know what we're in for.
This mortal form has grown weak. I need sustenance.
My favorite moments. I mean, Thor having to make a hammer, a new hammer. The Guardian sing along introduction. I remember being in the theater thinking, how are they going to shift tones and introduce the Guardians? And well, of course they're going to play a pop song from the 70s, you know, and then have them come flying in and all that. But yeah, no, I think aside from those couple moments from Tom Holland as Spider-Man, Brolin, I love the way he had a very, his performance had a lot of layers to it. I like the temp, the timbre of his performance. I liked his moments with Gamora, Zoe Saldana, I thought, carried a lot of the movie. I should have expected, because obviously it's Thanos' daughter, but I didn't expect so much Gamora, and I was very happy to see it. But yeah, I think Brolin as Thanos, I think, is probably my MVP.
He was terrific, and again, that character was really interesting in that I didn't feel like I totally hated him.
No, you're not. I don't think you're supposed to. I mean, yeah. I think it's Marvel's doing a good job lately of giving us villains that are right. You know, you look at Killmonger, you look at Thanos, like, I mean, he does believe he is right. And that's, I think, you know, I think that's the crucial part of a good villain, is they have to believe they're doing the right thing. You know, he's not just twirling his mustache and I'm going to get you because I'm going to get you, you know?
Well, and they kind of tried that with Baron Zemo in Civil War, but it was a little bit convoluted in terms of what his plan was going to be to execute, and a lot of things had to go right, and it was much more sort of personally driven. So it's interesting how they've evolved that now to Thanos, who again has a point of view and has a justification that he believes is right, but his plan is much easier to grasp and to believe, you know, although it does make you wonder why we've had, you know, 5 or 6 movies talking about Infinity Stones and Thanos hanging out in space. And then finally, when he decides to get them, it's not that hard for him. Like, he could have done this. He probably could have done this a while ago. Like, what was the holdup? Because I don't remember what movie it was. Was it Black Panther? Where we get one of the post-credits tags is just him saying, like, putting on the gauntlet and saying, fine, I'll do it myself. Like, so what was his plan before that? He was just sending emissaries to try to get the Infinity Stones? And if so, why, when he's able to do it pretty easily?
You know what, Patrick? You just got to go with it. Just go with it. Just enjoy it.
What just happened? Please tell me nobody kissed me.
Anything else you want to say about Infinity War?
I don't know. I think maybe Doctor Strange gave Thanos a fake stone.
Okay.
Maybe he still has it, so then maybe when Thanos, like, comes back, maybe when he tries to, like, defeat the original Avengers and Captain Marvel, maybe he won't defeat them, and maybe mm-hmm. Doctor Strange will, like, come back out of nowhere.
Yeah,
with
I think you're
Spider-Man.
I think Doctor Strange knows what's up. I think he's the key to the whole thing in terms of I think he saw what was going to happen, and I think he knows how they will defeat Thanos. I don't know how much Gamora is involved. I don't know how much Doctor Strange is involved, or how much Captain Marvel will be involved. But yeah, so it's really just the original Avengers and Rocket, and now probably Captain Marvel, right?
Yeah.
And that's it? Yeah. Do you think Ant-Man might join them for Avengers 4?
Yeah, and...
he wasn't in this one, right?
No, and the Wasp wasn't in it either.
No.
I thought the Wasp was going to be there because my sister Rosie's t-shirt was an Infinity War t-shirt, and it had the Wasp on it.
Well, what the heck?
Speaking of which, was this not a really good Doctor Strange movie, too?
Yeah, I mean, like, again, he almost needed to be in more of it, but I liked the stuff we got of Doctor Strange here more than I did in Doctor Strange.
I was thinking, like, huh, pairing him with Tony Stark, all right. And, you know, in the beginning it was fun because, of course, you take the skeptical science, you know, science guy, Tony Stark, and you pair him with the wizards, which was good fun in the beginning. But I didn't expect them to carry that the whole movie in, but then they butt heads, and then I'm thinking to myself, oh, right, because that Doctor Strange movie, kind of like the Ant-Man movie, where you're like, oh, this is just Iron Man again.
Right.
You know? I mean, much more than Ant-Man, you know, Stephen Strange is presented in his solo movie, you know, very much as the same arc as Tony Stark, you know, getting a little rid of Zego and all that and serving a higher purpose. So seeing them together at first was a little counterintuitive. I was like, huh, it was like pairing Tony Stark with Peter Quill. I was like, oh, right. Is that going to work?
Right.
Because they're kind of the same. But then they pitched Peter Quill so much darker because they kill Gamora.
Right.
So he has a different edge to him. And then they both have things to do on their own where they're not just bouncing off each other. So it ended up working out really well.
Well, and the best stuff in Doctor Strange is, you know, the last 15 minutes when he's really flexing, which I just recently found out was rewritten by Dan Harmon. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. I didn't know specifically the ending, but I know he did a draft on it. He did a polish.
Like, I think that the really, and I don't want to spoil the end of Doctor Strange, but like the best thing about it is the resolution of the big bad. If that's a Dan Harmon thing, like, he deserves a lot of credit.
I remember him saying on his podcast that they kept bringing him in for meetings, asking him about portals and how portals worked and all that. And so, you know, you can see that at the end.
So that's the best stuff in the movie when he's really kind of flexing his powers. And so it makes sense that he be cooler in this movie because we already find him in that state. He's already super powerful. And so it's fun to watch him do a lot of that cool shit in this movie, you know, and be really, really powerful. I mean, there's a handful of characters who are super powerful, and I appreciated the fact that somebody even calls that out when Scarlet Witch finally comes down and like wipes out a bunch of bad guys. And
Why was she up there the whole time?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, yeah, thank you.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
Okay, joining me now to talk about Avengers Infinity War is Alejandra Gonzalez. Hi, Alejandra.
Hi.
We have come up with an excellent segment for you for this very special supersized episode. You have a great talent for casting F This Movie people as MCU characters.
That's my only talent.
It is your mutant power, but we're not talking about the X-Men right now. We're talking purely MCU. They belong at Fox. So when we do an X-Men episode, yes, of course, you will have to cast each of us as an X person. But in the meantime, so we thought it would be fun to figure out who on the podcast is which MCU character. I don't know where you want to start.
Should we just get ourselves out of the way?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so I hope this doesn't come off as braggy, but I casted myself as Rocket. Because not only is he my favorite, and I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible with this, but, you know, he's kind of tiny and he's like this ball of attitude, but he's actually really, really sensitive on the inside. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's me to a T, and I think a lot of my friends agree. So I feel like a really deep connection with him, and I don't think I could say that I'm anybody else.
Well, there's one more reason why you should be Rocket. It was your joke. I don't want to steal it, but it's the
black... Is it my joke?
The black shade around the eyes.
Okay, so I do my eyeliner really heavy every day to emulate a raccoon.
That's right. Well, that's pretty perfect casting.
Thank you. They should really hire me.
You knocked it out of the park. They hire you, though. Is this a job? Like, is this a marketable skill, I guess?
Of course it is. Don't they have, like, casting directors?
Oh, yeah, good point. All right, so you are Rocket Raccoon that is inspired. Who do you cast as me?
Okay, so you are not going to agree with this.
Oh, shit.
But I casted you as Captain America.
Okay, because of my handsome beard?
Exactly. and also because you're kind of the leader.
Okay.
Within, like, these characters, mm-hmm. even though you're never going to admit to any of that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I find you to be a little bit altruistic mm-hmm. with the interests of your friends in mind all the time.
Well, that's very nice.
And also, you're my least favorite. So.
Oh, wow. Shit. I cannot believe Captain America is your least favorite. It's like you're watching these movies wrong.
I think so, too. I don't know. I think I have to rewatch them because everyone's really, like, passionate about him. Yeah. And I just think he's kind of... it's not that I don't like him. It's that I'm kind of, like, indifferent towards him. He doesn't do anything for me. Well, he does now because of the beard.
But. All right, good. all right, well, I'll take it. That's very nice of you. I don't mind being Captain America. Who's next?
Okay, so this one was probably the hardest for me because... besides you, I'm probably closest to Adam. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I thought this would be easy, but it actually was extremely difficult to think of somebody in the MCU who resembled him. I was going to say Star-Lord, and then I was going to say Drax because he's extremely funny, but there's a line in Guardians 2 where Rocket says that he doesn't understand puns, and that's like the complete opposite.
That is of the Adam. Center of Adam's universe, yes.
So I casted him as Yondu.
Okay.
Because I feel like in my year of knowing Adam, he's not really been super affectionate. I've never seen him be extremely nurturing or affectionate with his friends, but I know that he cares about them a lot. So, you know, it's more like Guardians 2 Yondu. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he's like probably one of the funniest characters. And I can just hear Adam saying, "I'm Mary Poppins, y'all," in my head.
I can hear it too because it's my ringtone. It's,
I was going to make a joke about how that should be a ringtone. Yes. So I think he is the most similar to Yondu, though I don't think that's super accurate still.
Okay.
But I kind of like that pick.
All right. I like it. Who's next?
Okay, so next is Rob.
Yes.
Cristino.
Yes.
I casted him as Ant-Man.
Interesting.
He reminds me of Paul Rudd so much, and okay. I don't know if it is, like, in the hair or what. I can't put my finger on it, but...
Paul Rudd is very handsome, and so is Rob.
I agree.
So I really think it's pretty brilliant.
I think that's brilliant, and I just feel like... I wanted Ant-Man to be in this movie so bad. So it wouldn't make sense for him to be, but...
Right. I'm hoping he's in the next one.
They mentioned him in this one, I think, in passing, because I remember thinking, oh, there's Rob.
Yeah, just barely, but he does get mentioned. Okay, who's next?
Okay, so Doug.
Yes.
So Doug, as your best friend, mm-hmm. had to be Bucky.
Yes.
There's really no other reasoning.
Well, he moved to California, much like Bucky became the evil Winter Soldier. And it's like Doug and I hardly know each other anymore. And like we're enemies, much the same way that Cap and Bucky are enemies. So it's pretty inspired.
I think you would also like sacrifice the well-being of the planet to save him.
Yeah,
so.
I would. all right, good. Who else?
Okay, so next is Heather.
Yes.
Who I also don't think she's going to agree with this casting because she doesn't give herself enough credit, but she would be Black Widow.
Okay.
Because she is kind of like Cap's new right hand. Mm-hmm. And I think she's the closest to him out of all the Avengers. Mm-hmm. And I know you guys are like BFFs.
Totally.
So I think that's pretty accurate. And she's also totally badass.
Right.
And Heather is also totally badass.
Right. And used to kill people for Russia. So There are actually quite a few parallels. So, again, spot on.
You can't say self-incriminating.
Spot on. All right, who's next?
Okay, Robin is Mantis.
Yes.
I was going to make her Groot, but I felt bad because he doesn't have much of, like, a speaking role.
Okay.
So I made her Mantis because I think she is the sweetest person. And she, like, she's very empathetic. She's also very funny. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's just what I see.
Okay. I like it. That's good.
Next is, okay, so this one was tough for me because I don't really know him that well. I would like to, but it's Mike.
Yes.
You said he would be Drax.
He should be Drax, yes. My reasoning for Mike being Drax is that Mike isn't like the most talkative person. Like if we're in a room or like when we record our commentaries, right? Mike speaks once to everybody else's 5 or 10 times. And yet each time he speaks, it's the funniest thing. So he's the most economical with his words, and then each time it comes out, it's the funniest thing.
It's so true. He doesn't even tweet that much, but when he does, it's pure gold.
Right, always. So I felt
that
like
does make sense.
I felt like Drax was pretty spot on. Also, he has famously huge turds. So there's a number of reasons, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Wow, I think that's the most accurate so far.
Who's next?
Okay, so it's Adam T.
Yes.
You also chose this one.
Yes, I said Adam Thaws should be Spider-Man because he's kind of wiry and goofy and has that same sort of energy that Peter Parker has, where he's just very excitable, you know, kind of making jokes all the time. He has that same energy. So to me, that made sense.
That's a good casting. Also,
thank you.
I just want to say I wasn't the biggest Spider-Man fan either until Infinity War. A lot of the Spider-Man stuff was like the most touching to me.
Yeah, he was great.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so next is JB, who you also chose.
JB I chose as the Hulk because he is very smart, as Bruce Banner is, and he's capable of tremendous rage. And turns into a giant green monster. So I feel like, of course, it would be JB.
Okay. So next is Eric, who I chose as Star-Lord because I know he loves music.
Yeah.
And he also is very, very funny. So I thought this was pretty spot on, too.
That's a good call.
Okay. So Mark A, you chose as Black Panther.
I did, mostly for his stoicism. Black Panther
wisdom.
Yeah, I mean, Mark's not like a serious guy, but he is a stoic guy, and I felt like that kind of matched Black Panther. I could have said Vision for Mark on, but I was like, yeah, Black Panther's cooler, so let's go with the one who's cooler and make that Mark.
That's very sweet of you. Okay, so next is Steph, who I chose as Doctor Strange. I was gonna make her Wanda because her beautiful hair color, but I went with Doctor Strange instead because A, I feel like she would like that casting. B, he's very like wise and his humor is very fine tuned and intelligent. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's her as well.
I like it. So yeah. That's a good one.
Next I have Lexi.
Okay.
Who I chose as Iron Man because I think she's very sassy, just like he is. Uh-huh. And they both have exceptional style.
Okay, good. I like it. You're really good at this. You have quite a gift.
Thank you. Hire me, Marvel. Okay, so next is Erica, who you chose to be Pepper Potts.
Yeah, I said she should be Pepper Potts just because Gwyneth Paltrow in these movies reminds me of her. And because lately she isn't on the site or on the podcast as much just because life keeps us busy and pulls us in different directions. So she kind of pops in from time to time, which reminds me of Pepper Potts. Like, hey, good to see that person. Okay, now they're going to go away for a little while. It made sense in my head.
And also she's beautiful and blonde.
Is Pepper Potts blonde?
Yeah, she's blonde.
All right. I picture her as more of a redhead, but what do I know?
Like, are you colorblind?
I might be. This isn't how I wanted to find out.
Well, okay.
Who's next?
Next and last is Heath, who you chose as yes. War Machine.
I chose Heath as War Machine because in the same way that War Machine is sort of working for the U.S. government as well as an Avenger, I thought that matched Heath because Heath is with us at F This Movie, but also has his own thing going on with Serial at Midnight, which is his blog. So he's kind of working two roles. And also he's very funny the same way that War Machine is, or Don Cheadle rather, is very funny. So that casting made sense to me.
I think we did a really good job.
I think you did a good job. I think I barely squeaked by.
Do you think we would have won this Infinity War?
No, definitely, definitely not, because in our version, Captain America, first one dead. Right out of the gate. He's just destroyed. Yeah. Very sad. Very
also,
sad.
Rocket is crying somewhere.
Well, this was a super fun exercise. Thank you for putting so much thought into this, because you did a pretty awesome job.
Well, thank you for having me.
What do you think of Bruce Banner in this movie?
Yeah, so that's my other big issue. The only major thing I have, and I had this in Ragnarok too, I really don't like our reboot of Bruce Banner as a goofball. I really like Banner in Avengers, and I rewatched Age of Ultron recently, and I know it's this famous clusterfuck. I really didn't see the clusterfuckery as bad this time when I watched it, but the one thing I do like is the way Ruffalo plays Banner. He plays him as sheepish, he plays him as timid, but he plays him as the wheels are always turning, and he's an introvert, so he's not detached from what's going on. He's thinking about it, but he's sort of quiet in the background. You know, he's the guy who, you know, the group project at school where there's the three kids who want to get to it right away and dig into stuff, but then he sits quietly the whole time and then offers the solution at the very end. I really like that about his character. This and Ragnarok both kind of, and I understood it for Ragnarok because it was much more of a comedy, they kind of repitch his character a little bit more comedic and a little bit more, I don't know if it's self-effacing, but I don't know if I like the way that they are doing the whole conflict between him and Hulk. Like, I like that they're making Hulk a separate entity because that makes sense, because as the character goes on and as their relationship changes, he starts to be able to control the Hulk more. The Hulk gains more sentience. I understand the idea of it being more of a Jekyll and Hyde thing, but I really don't, I just don't like it. It doesn't play to Ruffalo's strengths as an actor.
Well, and it gets into, again, maybe one of the criticisms of Marvel, which is that why does everyone have to be funny? And for the first half of the movie, I was kind of on board for Banner because he is the one who has seen what's coming and is afraid and is trying to warn others.
Right.
It's in maybe that last sequence, especially when he's in the Hulkbuster suit and it becomes kind of jokey.
Well, when Thor arrives, he's like, "Oh, you guys are screwed now." Right, it's like, right. That's not Bruce Banner. Like, come on.
Well, it's, all of his character development has had to happen in these big ensemble movies.
Yeah.
He doesn't get his own movies to really explore the change in dynamic between him and the Hulk, where it goes from, I hate the Hulk, I don't want to be the Hulk, to now sort of embracing it, understanding it, trying to control it, trying to call it out at certain times. We haven't really been able to follow that because it has only happened in these Avengers movies or a little bit in Thor Ragnarok. So it's like these big changes have happened, but they've all happened off. These big changes have happened, but they've all happened off screen. And I think that hinders a little bit of our, it's harder for us to get our bearings with him, I think.
I think it's okay because the movie has, like when I watched Thor Ragnarok, I said, okay, we're going to shift him a little bit because he has to fit the universe. Like I liked the rebranding of Thor. I liked going from the Shakespearean kind of melodrama thing to a little bit more of the Guardians of the Galaxy vibe. And if you're going to take the cosmic element of the MCU and you're going to make it feel cohesive, you have to combine, you don't have to, but you should. I think it was smart that they combined the tone so that Thor and the Guardians together, as they do in this movie, I loved Thor with Rocket Raccoon, makes sense. It's absurd, but it's also, there's this wonderful aspect of endless imagination to it. I appreciated that, that shift in Hulk in the movie, because Hulk got to be Hulk so much of the movie. I just don't necessarily know, you know, if it fits, because like you said, so much of the character shift happens off screen, and I'm thinking of, you know, that's, you know, I'm always angry Cap, you know, that banner, that shift, it is off screen. It doesn't bother me as much when it's like, Vision and Wanda. You know, Vision and Wanda are introduced in this movie as essentially being together. And, you know, they were building to that. And obviously, if you know the comics, you know that happens. But I was sort of okay with that. I was like, okay, yeah, the two are together. That makes sense. I don't mind so much that that happens off screen. I had a bigger problem with his shift in character. But I understand it as a, well, this is part of the necessary shift we have to make this all feel cohesive. Bruce Banner can't be sitting in the background, shuffling, you know, his feet around and muttering to himself while there's this huge battle going on. You know, I think that was solved in the Avengers, the original Avengers movie, where he decides to take the, you know, to take the hit. It's explored even more in Age of Ultron, where the whole thing with Code Green and how he doesn't want to engage if he doesn't have to, and him leaving Earth because he felt that he was so dangerous. Maybe the shift in character is just because I never felt, anyway, and correct me if I'm wrong, that they really settled that whole thing. Right. You know, they sort of skipped over that part of his conflict, his interior conflict, and went straight to Goofy. Again, it's just a feeling I have just right now. Just rub me the wrong way.
Who was your MVP of the movie?
I was surprised it turned out to be Spider-Man. I had basically grown up hearing from guys that, like, oh, Spider-Man's my favorite because he's so relatable. He's like me. So I enjoyed the Raimi Spider-Man movies, and I'd pick up an occasional issue. I'll be like, well, I like that he's funny. I can relate to that, of course. just kidding. But he was never relatable to me. I've never been a teenage boy in New York City, I guess.
You need to change your Twitter bio then.
Look, I'm trying to sell an image here, and I need you to work with me. And even in the films, I enjoyed him, and I just enjoyed him. I didn't really feel relatableness people bring up. Is relatableness a word?
I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay, great. I actually strangely related to Spider-Man in Infinity Wars. It opened up with him kind of doing the Homecoming and Civil War thing with him. Like, hey, come on, Iron Man, I can help out. Mm-hmm. And it progressed very naturally to me, where he was like, okay, I'm in space now. Might be a little over my head. let me kind of see where I could actually be useful. And he had probably like one of the quieter character arcs, but I really connected to it. Thor is a close second for me. Everyone was so great in this, though. Like...
Well, and I've talked about this with a few other people on this show, but if I have a disappointment in the movie, and I do think that it's something that's going to be paid off in the next installment, it's that my favorite character in the MCU is Captain America, and he had kind of nothing to do in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that that will change in the second half.
Yeah. Although when he entered the screen in my theater with that beard, there was an audible, like, swooning.
Well, yeah, hello. Yeah. No, more than one. I've heard more than one report of applause breaking out when he shows up, which is like, I don't know. That's kind of great because he's in all of the marketing. Like, it's not a surprise that Captain America is in this movie. And yet here we are watching this movie, and a character that we know is going to show up shows up, and yet people are moved to applaud and or swoon.
Mm-hmm. No, he's one of my favorites of all the films, but I can't really call him out as an MVP for Infinity War. No. Like you said, I don't want to say he's a glorified extra, but I'm going to do kind of an awkward pause now.
Well, because he shows up and he's like, okay, I'll fight. And then he fights, you know, and he doesn't really have any character business.
Yes, I kept waiting for him and Tony Stark to have anything.
Right, which I'm guessing, again, will pay off in the next movie. I love, you know, this incarnation of Spider-Man, and I loved him in this movie, and I do think he makes like a neat kind of audience surrogate in a way, in that he's sort of outside of it, and he's excited, and he's still in awe of all of these superheroes, and the fact that we can still feel that way 10 years and however many movies in, again, I think is a testament to these movies. But I do feel bad because growing up, my favorite character has always been Spider-Man. And now I've sort of been reduced to like these guys who say Spider-Man is their favorite. I believe that's the way you put it. There were always these guys who would say Spider-Man.
Yeah, I herded y'all into the same.
So now I'm part of that. But my thing with Spider-Man was I never related to Spider-Man. That wasn't why I liked him. I just liked him the best. Like, I liked his powers. I liked that he was funny. I don't know. He was always my favorite, but now I feel bad about it.
No, don't. I just heard the relatable thing so much that I don't know. I guess that's the bias I took. And I was like, well, I don't relate to him, so I guess he's not for me. Back to Wonder Woman, which wasn't a bad decision.
Who is very relatable.
Okay, that one's on me.
So the ending, I was amazed at some of the conversation around the ending, mm-hmm. where everyone's like, what? How can they end it there? Or people talking about how devastated they were, and they were crying. And I felt none of that.
Okay.
And I wonder if it's because, again, the internet has changed so much of how we experience movies, because we went into this knowing that Avengers 4 is mostly shot and coming out in 2019 because it's reported on daily, you know, basically.
Yeah.
So when that happens at the end, I feel nothing because I'm like, yeah, but they're going to be back in the next movie because we know that there's a Guardians 3 and we know that there's a Spider-Man 2. Mm-hmm. And so we know that these deals have been made. Like, these characters are not dead.
Yeah. I felt like I did at the end of Fellowship of the Ring, at the end of this one.
Yeah.
Where it's just like,
you're excited to see the next one.
I'm excited to see the next one, and that I know that there's been some loss, but it's not over. And, like, you know, it's just like, Sauron is stronger now.
Right.
But he hasn't won yet.
Right.
And everything. So, like, it's not a complete downer. So I wasn't, like, crying or anything.
Peter
like
Parker's
that, but, yeah.
fear and saying I don't want to go.
That was good.
It's amazing. Yeah. Right. And again, I feel like I was way more emotional about Gamora's death than I was about any of the people.
Yeah, I was
dissolving.
Too. Yeah, I mean, like, the Gamora death was the thing that like I could feel that throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It just was still with me while I was watching the rest of it.
Well, you know, because it affected us, because we love that character, because it was well done, because Thanos is carrying the burden, because
also, Star-Lord didn't know yet, and you've got that kind of
and his reaction was great, and again, he fucks up where they almost have the gauntlet off of Thanos, and he fucks it up because he's so
upset,
impetuous and angry, right? You shouldn't have killed my mom, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's that same impulse within him, and again, true to the character. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I didn't necessarily feel emotional as people died, and I just wondered if some of that, you know, because again, go back to, not to compare this to Empire Strikes Back, even though I know every single website has. If you go back to Empire Strikes Back, like, when that movie came out, there was no internet. Nobody was like, oh, but we already know Return of the Jedi comes out in 1983. It was just, it ended, and you were like, well, what next? Oh, my God, you know?
Yeah. And there's something to be said for that. I think it's kind of exciting to have that with your, it's, like, I'm in that period with The Last Jedi now. It's like, where is this going to go?
Right, right.
And that's exciting. And Infinity War, where is this going to go? The Matrix, it didn't pan out, but, like, after Reloaded, I was still very interested in
because
what was
the
happening.
End of Reloaded sets up some amazing stuff.
Yeah, and then Revolutions deals with
doesn't quite
any of it.
Pay it off. Yeah,
yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like, it's cool. I'm happy with it. for like a beginning of summer movie, this was fucking awesome. I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that I'm genuinely excited about, but like, it'll be hard to top the just the experience of sitting through it and watching and feeling them pull it off, and to spend so much time with characters that I like all in the same movie. I mean, as the end credits were going and the names kept appearing, I was like, my God, look what they have done here.
Yeah, there's like 25 stars.
A-list, right. these characters that you're like, oh my God. Why is Chris Pratt the and, though?
I don't know.
He's the last, like, and.
Yeah, I do like when casts get so convoluted where they're just, like, featuring two people with two people. Right. And, I don't know. Yeah, that's always
like Josh Brolin getting the and, okay, I get her with, you know, I get that. But then, and Chris Pratt, I'm like, what? He was one of the main characters of this movie.
That must have been some kind of like power flex on behalf of his agents or something. I don't know. But this was cool. And then we got Deadpool 2 and Ant-Man, I think, are the other two comic book movies coming out this summer.
Is that it?
I think so.
Does Aquaman come out late
that's
this
December.
Year? Okay, that's what I thought.
And I'm hoping that DC just goes into the, like, let's just make a good movie route, like, instead of tying stuff together.
I think that's what they're doing.
It's smart.
Yeah, I think if they've gone more so the kind of Wonder Woman route with Aquaman than, like, let's do our shared universe.
For sure, yeah.
But, yeah, this was really cool. I'm excited about what's next. I'm excited at the idea that, like, just the original Avengers are going to have to defeat Thanos.
It's interesting. I didn't put that together, but that's a cool kind of tact.
And again, I don't need them killed off just because, and this goes back to us knowing too much. Well, we know their contracts are up, so they'll probably get killed off. Like, why do we know their contracts are up? Like, what? How does that improve our enjoyment?
Never be renegotiated.
But also, how does that improve our enjoyment of movies? Do you know what I mean? Like, no one knew this in the 1950s. They didn't know. Whatever.
he's moving over to Columbia. There's no chance.
He'll never do another picture with MGM.
The Sting 3, think not. Sorry to keep going back to the Matrix on this, but like going back
Let's
to the heroes dying thing.
Oh, yeah. Ugh.
Like,
that doesn't make your movie better.
The Matrix is like a case study in this gritty development that you want in practice isn't cool.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, I don't want any of these characters. I don't need or want any of these characters to die. Like, if one or two of them does and it has some kind of, like, big feeling to it, you know, so be it. But, like, at the end of The Matrix, when you're just like, how did we get here? We're on a bench with the Oracle and the Architect and the girl from the train station. Like, I thought we started with Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, and Carrie-Anne Moss.
And to kill Carrie-Anne Moss, like, so many times, just, or, you know, to try to save her so many times only to kill her. It's like, what are we doing? And same with Neo, like.
What if it's, like, at the end of Reloaded, where Chris Pratt will, like, lift the Matrix out of Gamora?
Yeah.
I want that to happen.
That's fine. I'm into it.
Yeah. I just want her to send me an email letting me know that she's okay. Like, it's just a setback.
One of my first favorite moments was when they cut to the Milano and we see the Guardians for the first time and I get excited and they're listening to Rubber Band Man or
Spinners,
Rubber Man and she's singing it.
Yeah.
And it's so great. She's like tapping along and singing it and it just makes you love her and these characters. You know, I got to watch the movie next to my 9-year-old son, and every time new people showed up, he would turn to me just so excited react and like, look who it is.
Yeah.
Because at one point he turned to me and was like, okay, we still haven't seen Ant-Man and Black Panther and Winter Soldier. And so then, like, 2 seconds later, it cuts to Wakanda, and he just turns to me like, what?
And then you're just like, when I was a kid, stuff like this never happened.
No!
Yeah.
I have one last thing
add. Let's hear it.
I think it's cool that since, like, in the trailers when I saw the Hulkbuster, I thought Iron Man was in that suit, but then Bruce Banner was trying to turn into the Hulk, but Hulk said, he was like, Hulk, okay, this is the last second, and then Hulk said, no.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what do you mean, no? And so he had to go in the Hulkbuster.
But that was pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
He liked being in there. Did you ever think that he was going to turn into the Hulk inside the Hulkbuster suit and that Hulk would be driving the Hulkbuster?
No, that would be crazy.
I thought it might happen, but it would probably wouldn't fit, right? Wouldn't he break right out of there if he turned into the Hulk?
Yeah, that's what I was imagining.
Yeah, you're probably right. All right, do you want to say bye to everyone?
Yeah, bye.
Thanks for talking about this with me, and thanks for going to see the movie with me. It was really fun to see it with you.
Yeah.
Love you, bud.
I love you, too.
Do you have a prediction for Avengers 4 in terms of how this is all going to resolve itself?
Ooh, okay. Okay, let's see here. Okay, so half of everyone is dusted in the rapture. So I feel like it's probably going to be like a religious picture.
Okay. Like Ten Commandments style? Or
yeah, and I'm trying to decide, like, will God be a physical character coming in? I don't know.
Probably.
But everybody put your money on the next Avengers being a religious picture. I know, I'm terrible at predictions.
No, I am too.
I barely watch trailers unless I have to. Like, I like being surprised. I like going in as kind of an idiot when I see a movie. I like being swept up. I like being transported. Like, I'm the perfect sucker for a movie, really.
That's good. I kind of wish more people were like that, because I think one
of the... Why
are
you a movie producer? Ba-dum-bum. Hey.
one of the issues, concerns I've had, whatever you want to call it, surrounding this whole Marvel Cinematic Universe is just we know too much all the time. We know what movies are being made and what characters are coming and who's going to show up in this. And the release date for when it is, and, well, Captain Marvel's going to come out before Infinity War 2, and, well, gosh, we already know there's a Guardians 3, so Gamora can't be dead. And, like, we know so much that I think it hurts some of our responses to the movie.
Yeah. See, I never know anything, and I love movies. So, I feel like an idiot sometimes, but I guess I'll keep it going.
Yeah, you're doing it right.
It would be great if they just start, like, mixing other comic brands into this. So, like,
do it.
In 2030, it's just, like, the Crow?
What's Jughead doing here?
It's like Thor's going to take down Top Dollar.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No, I think this was a perfect show, so I think we're good.
Good. All right. Yeah. Yay. Good for us.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Happy start of summer. Mm-hmm. We're basically off and running, I guess. Yeah. So,
another thing to have this movie where the action is.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't often cover new releases, but in the summer we sometimes do, because I'm sure we'll do a show on, I don't know if we'll do a show on Solo, but I think we need to do a Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom show.
Get the team back together. I was curious if you wanted to do another one of those.
Let's try it.
Jurassic World. I am hopeful because it's the director of A Monster Calls, which is like the greatest sad movie that I've seen in the past few years.
I legit get nothing from that trailer.
No, and I'm worried that Ian Malcolm's in one scene.
Yeah.
I think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, Blue.
But Bryce Dallas Howard is in it, and that's what I'm going for, so.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's kind of weird.
Get her in the Marvel Universe, by the way.
Yeah.
Give her a part to play.
I think it's kind of weird that it's, like, a good thing that the closer moment, the capper moment of the trailer is just like, what if this dinosaur eats this little girl?
Right?
I'm like, I don't need that. I don't want to see that in my life.
We already see the dinosaur eat someone in the trailer, right? Like,
I think so.
Which is like, what
and
year
also
is it?
They also keep doing the thing where they're just like, let's just keep mutating these dinosaurs and like make it completely a predator. And B.D. Wong is now the criminal. He's like the Thanos of the Jurassic Park universe.
Just sitting by himself on an island somewhere.
Yeah.
Happy with what he's done.
It's just like the Avengers are like, I thought we were just going to disintegrate, not get killed by Allosauruses. Wakanda's just like, Jurassic Park forever!
Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
We will talk to you guys next week.
Shuri, can you cure him of this raptor bite?
All right, hey. All right, good job, guys. Let's just not come in tomorrow. Let's just take a day.
I'm just trying to keep it from going from dead air.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's what we don't want on a podcast is dead air.